This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network, which includes the Erotica Podcast, Erotica Sci-Fi and Fantasy, Erotica Loving Wives, the Spotify podcast Erotica Taboo, and the E.P. and Non-Erotic Podcast. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions with bonus episodes. Links for everything are in the podcast description. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. Gifted Grifter by Dr. Squeaky. Chapter 01. The Beginning. For reasons that will soon become clear, I cannot tell you my name. At one time, I was a research scientist. I had started out thinking I would be an engineer, but became interested in psychology along the way. My work combined both. My specialty area was the electromagnetics of mental activity. I was hired after graduate school by the Department of Defense. My boss was an old cold warrior with a fondness for dream weapons. He had hopes that my experiments could lead to thought-controlled weapons, like the Supermig from the old movie Firefox, and had given me all the resources I needed to try to harness the power of thought. Two was working on a device to magnify and transmit the micromagnetic impulses that neurons generated when active. I also had built a receiver for the magnified signals. It could pick up radio stations 500 miles away, but outside of that I wasn't getting far. The problem was that I couldn't determine for sure that there were meaningful patterns in the micromagnetic impulses, and if there were, I sure didn't know how to convert them into a meaningful output. My data were promising insofar as test subjects thinking different kinds of thoughts produced radically different magnetic fields, but I couldn't even begin to guess how I could ever relate them back to what underlying meaning they might have. With billions of neurons and neural connections in the brain, it wasn't like I could just proceed with trial and error. But I also didn't have any better ideas. During the last 6 months that I worked for DOD, I had a graduate student working with me. Jessie was her name, and her area of expertise was neural imaging. She was collecting data for her dissertation while assisting me with my transmission experiments. She was also taller than I at 6'2". Her straight blonde hair was nearly 3 feet long and had played Division I volleyball as an undergraduate. She was always very professional at work, in demeanor and dress. But when you're that tall, shirts that are tailored to just meet the top of a skirt tend to come up a bit short, and skirts tend to fall a higher above the knee than intended. As a result, she was constantly flashing bits of enticing flesh when she didn't mean to. I spent way too much time keeping an eye on her because you never knew when the next show would start. She was in a relationship, though, so other than my straying eyes, I too stayed within the guidelines of appropriate professional behavior. We had spent all week trying to calibrate our latest experiment. She was going to do PET scanning of a test subject doing specific cognitive tasks. I was going to try to use my magnetic amplification helmet to try to reproduce the images remotely using my receiver, then correlate magnetic impulses with neural activity on the PET scan. She was wearing the amplification helmet while I worked with the software and the receiver to sharpen the three-dimensional recreation of the magnetic activity in her brain. Even though it was Friday, we had put in a long hard day, and it was well after 5 before it finally started generating sharp images. "Finally, we can go home," she sighed. She started to pull off her helmet. Her hair got caught up in it from having had it on for so long. I laughed and said, "Oh, that's a nice look. Hey, what do you think of this one?" The receiver unit consisted of three thick tubes running front to back and left to right, welded together to form a half sphere. It looked like the framework you might use to construct a globe, but with an open bottom. I put it on my head, which made it look like a hollow helmet. Suddenly this thought flashed through my head. "Mushroom." A split second later, Jesse said, "You look like a mushroom." "Mushrooms? I don't even like mushrooms, and certainly didn't see myself to notice that perhaps I look like one." Then a split second later she had said mushrooms. "Huh. Hey, Jesse, that thing on?" I asked. Again, a rapid succession of thoughts flashed across my head, but with a distinct quality of apartness. Like they were coming from somewhere outside my head, the ideas of distrust, tiredness, frustration, and, "Here we go again. Yes, I turned it off," she said testily. It was as if I was getting her thoughts transmitted into my brain. "Got big plans for tonight?" I asked, testing further. More flashes, boyfriend, frozen pizza, TV junkie, loser. "Nah," she said. "Gonna go home, grab a bite, and just veg in front of the TV." More flashes, "Be polite, ask back." "You?" she asked. "I think I'm gonna stay here and keep working," I said. "Suit yourself," flashed across my mind, a second before she said it. I took off the helmet and held it in my hand. It had never occurred to me that with a strong enough receiver the micromagnetic fields associated with thinking could be picked up from a distance without amplification. And it had never occurred to me that the brain could react to micromagnetic fields, relating them back into concepts. But that seemed to be what was happening. My receiver was finally calibrated right, and was basically snatching a snapshot of someone else's brain activity and relaying it back to my own brain, which then interpreted the meaning of that activity for me. It appeared that I had created a machine that could read minds. I hadn't thought out the implications of having created a mind-reading machine were, but it seemed pretty obvious that there could be a lot of applications. As a result, I had instinctively kept my discovery to myself. But I needed to test it out. Would it work on other people, or had being connected to Jesse for hours resulted in a person-specific calibration? Given that every person's brain is organized slightly differently, this was certainly possible. And was there anything special about the specific design of the receiver? Or could I possibly design a smaller, portable version one that I might be able to field test? I ran out to my car, grabbed an old baseball cap that I remembered was in my trunk and took it back to my office. Fortunately, I had built several prototypes of the receiver, so I had many half-assembled pieces already available. I spent about 45 minutes assembling pieces of a receiver and duct taping them to the inside of the hat. Then I loaded in the software and began the calibration program, ran out to the nearest drive-thru, then came back and ate while the program finished up. By 7:30, I had a portable, baseball cap receiver to test. I put in some cotton stuffing so the electronics wouldn't be so sharp and pointy on my head, put the cap on, and headed out to test it out. But where? I got in my car and started to drive. One of the first things I saw was a convenience store. Perfect. I drove up and walked into the store. There was a woman behind the counter, mid-20s with too many tattoos, talking on a cell phone. I couldn't hear what she was saying, but I kept getting flashes of ideas, marijuana, boyfriend, sex, movie, Doritos. That could very well be what she was thinking. Certainly I wasn't thinking it. I went to the cooler and grabbed a six-pack. I noticed that when I wasn't looking at her, I was no longer hearing her thoughts. Either it had something to do with aiming, or additional visual information was needed for the brain to be able to interpret the signals. I went to the front to pay, and as soon as I looked at her the signals started in again. What a bother, hold on, check ID, screw it, this guy is way old, ring it up and get him out of here, $7.44. That will be $7.44, she said without the slightest hint of courtesy. I gave her a 10, and the thoughts came, cash, change, I hate math, $2.66, is that right, I don't know, I don't care, whatever. She handed me my change and started talking on her phone again. Girlfriend, cheating on her boyfriend, going to be a fight. The cap was telling me much more than I cared to know about the life of the minimum wage clerk at the convenience store. I was shaking with excitement when I got to the car. It worked. It didn't need to calibrate to one person for long periods of time, and it could be taken anywhere. So now what do I do with it? I started driving to nowhere in particular, pondering. I may have worked for the Department of Defense, but I did not agree with their politics or policy. I had strong reservations about revealing my discovery to my employers, even though they had financed my research. But what would I do with it if I didn't give it to the government? I certainly couldn't just sell it to the highest bidder. That would be worse. I could imagine some podunk dictator taking over the world with it. Okay, I thought, so why don't I take over the world? Easy, too much hassle. But I might be able to make the world my oyster. Then by chance I drove past a sign for a gentleman's club. Now, I have never been big on strip clubs, because I always felt like, why should I pay for the buffet if I wasn't allowed to eat it? But who doesn't dream of taking the stripper home and screwing her brains out at the end of her shift? Maybe my new invention would be just the ticket I could read the girl's thoughts and find out which strippers might be reacting to me, focus my efforts on them, and maybe get lucky. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Instead, all it ended up doing is showing how little I understood about strippers. I paid my cover charge and sat at a table off to the side. There was a brunette on the main stage in a schoolgirl outfit, except of course the shirt was extra tight and tied up just below her bust line to show her belly, and the skirt just barely reached to the bottom of her cheeks. I watched her for a few minutes, then realized I wasn't getting any thought signals from her. What was wrong? Well, the first thought was that I was just too far away. So I got up to go to the bathroom, and passed close to the stage on the way, gazing at her the whole time. When I got to within about 10 feet of her, I started getting signals from the device in my hat. While she was dancing, she was thinking. Come on, you pathetic losers, where's those dollar bills? Then. How much longer is this song? How much money have I made tonight? And. How long till the end of my shift? Okay, I got the hint. I went to the bathroom and returned to my seat. A number of other girls were going around offering lap dances. The first the blonde came up to me, she was thinking. Nice hat loser, I bet you're gonna be too cheap to buy a dance. She wasn't entirely wrong on that one end. I hate men. I passed. I started watching other girls. The closest one to me, giving a lap dance to a guy a couple of tables over, looked a little older perhaps but was in great shape. Suddenly, I got thoughts from her. Only $6,000 more and I can pay for Jimmy's operation. Holy shit, a girl with a sick kid at home major buzzkill. But I also realized that she was more than 10 feet away from her, yet I was still getting signals. I looked back at the main stage. The schoolgirl was done now and a new girl in a short blonde wig dressed like a secretary was starting her dance. I wasn't getting signals from her. Then I looked all the way across club, and there was a redheaded stripper sitting at the bar, alone, downing a drink in a short break before going and looking for another lap dance customer. To my surprise I picked signals from her too. Redheads, my favorite flavor. I thought. Then her thoughts came to me. I need some blow. Ugh, an addict. No thanks. But I was still pondering why I was getting signals, when the bartender came over to her. I imagined that he was asking if she wanted another drink, but as soon as he was close to her I wasn't getting signals anymore. Then he walked away, and they resumed. Aha! Distance wasn't the problem, interference was. When more than one person was close enough together, the electromagnetic radiations of their brains must interfere with each other, so that I couldn't pick up their thoughts. If I wanted to read a girl's mind, I would have to get her away from close proximity to other people. I stayed there for another half hour or so, but the story was the same. Every girl that went past was either thinking about scoring drugs, hating men or their job, and who might be an easy mark for a big tip. So much for any fantasy of taking home a stripper. I bought a lap dance from the girl with the sick kid and gave her a nice tip because I felt bad for her. But watching her dance knowing she was trying to finance an operation for her kid made me feel guilty, so really didn't enjoy it. When I paid her, I said something vague about, "Here's to good health for you and yours." Then I left the place. I got back in my car and started driving towards my apartment. So far, my invention was working great, but it wasn't helping me with the ladies. Still, my test had made me realize I could use my invention to make a lot of money. This was my ticket out of the DOD. But I was still feeling kind of down because I had had high hopes of having sex that night, so rather than go straight home, I wandered over to a bar nearby that usually attracted a university crowd. I figured I'd drown my sorrows a few times before heading home alone, device or no device. I had never come home from that place anything other than alone. But for some reason, I left my hat on just in case, I guess. I walked in. It was crowded as usual, and consequently, even if I had wanted to read a girl's mind, there was too much interference. I grabbed a beer and started looking around, as I'd done dozens of times before. Many of the girls in the place were pretty drunk by now, many holding on to men around them or each other to keep from falling down. Most were too young for my anyway. I turned back toward the bar and looked down to the end. Usually the bar was filled with couples, the girl on a stool and the boy watching over from behind. But way in the corner, in the second last seat before the waitress station against the wall, was Jessie, my graduate assistant. "What is she doing here?" I thought. "She was gonna chill at home?" I noticed that the last seat at the bar was empty, and there was no man watching over her from behind. Most likely scenario, he went to the bathroom. I figured I'd sort of hang back and watch for a few minutes until whoever she was with came back. I noticed that she was still dressed from work, white sleeveless blouse with a V-neck yellow suit jacket over. Thinking back to earlier in the day, I remembered that she was wearing a matching yellow skirt that was a bit too short, and black pumps. No one came to join her. Further, she was looking straight down at the bar, into her glass, like someone who's down and is drinking to get drunk. I saw a guy come up and say something to her. A second later he turned and walked away like a puppy with his tail between his legs. When he left, however, there was momentarily no one in close proximity to her, and my hat started reading her mind. Loser. Never wants to do anything. I gotta get a better boyfriend. Well, that explains why she was sitting here drinking rather than at home watching TV. That empty seat was still there. I figured there wouldn't be any harm in my taking it. I went over and started to sit. I could sense her recoiling, contracting to avoid any accidental physical contact that a potential suitor might induce, expecting to be hit on again and that she would need to deflect it. But when I said, "Fancy meeting you here," she recognized my voice, and instead she turned to look at me in surprise. "I didn't expect to see you here," she said. "You come here a lot?" What she was thinking was, "Oh no, my boss is seeing me drinking. Now he's sitting next to me. I hope I don't say anything stupid. Hey, aren't I supposed to be the one with the cheesy pickup lines?" I laughed, then I motioned the bartender to get refills for both of us. Her thoughts were, "Damn it, I already said something stupid. What does he mean? He's supposed to use the cheesy pickup lines. He's not gonna hit on me, is he? He's my boss, for God's sake." I turned to her and said, "I'll buy. I make more money than you do. For now, at least. Maybe you'll take my job when I'm gone." "What do you mean, when I'm gone?" she asked. Her thoughts echoed her words, but also flashed panic and fear that she needed me to stick around long enough to get her dissertation data. "Jessie," I asked, "if we were to shift our focus to getting your dissertation data, how soon could you be done?" She was doing mental arithmetic. I didn't need my hat to tell me that, although it confirmed it. She came up with a number. If all we did was collect my data, she could be done in 3 weeks. Then she asked, "Well, what do you mean shift our focus? Do you mean if all we did was collect my data?" "Yeah," I said, so that she could say out loud what I already knew but wasn't supposed to know. "Maybe as little as 3 weeks," she said. "Why?" "I have had an opportunity arise," I said, "and I'm going to be quitting. You know the DOD. Everything is top secret. The minute I quit, I'll be stripped of security clearance and escorted out the door. I want to make sure you get the data you need before I do that." Her thoughts were filled with relief. They also started to turn more personally positive towards me. I didn't have to wait until she was done with her data collection. I was doing this just to be a nice guy to her, and she knew it. "I would really appreciate if you did let me finish before you leave, because I won't be able to continue without the subject pool that only you have access to. I would hate to get so close and then have to wait, or even start over." "Yeah, I know," I said. "A nice girl like you deserves better than to get screwed like that." Good thing she didn't have a thought helmet, because I was thinking, "You deserve to get screwed in a completely different way. I'm willing to hold out until you finish, but let's finish as soon as you can," I continued. I put my arm around her should to give her a buddy-style hug, just intending to start physical contact in a safe fashion. When I did, however, I picked up an interesting signal. "Please don't touch the neck, please don't touch the neck." Now why would she not want me to touch her neck? Did she have an aversion to it, as some people do? except that she probably would have reflexively recoiled, turtle-like, when I put my arm around her if that were true. Maybe, it was because her neck was a very sensitive erogenous zone for her. I would have to look for an opportunity to test that hypothesis. So, why are you here anyway? I said, changing the subject. I thought you were going to be home watching TV? All of the negative thoughts about the boyfriend resurfaced. I decided I didn't want to just sit around all night. She said, half-lying. So you decided to come and just sit around here instead? Sounds to me like there's more to that story. I felt her negative boyfriend thoughts surface again. She considered telling me about them, but she didn't want to be telling her boss about her home troubles. I know, I'm your boss, you don't want to say, that's fine. But I'm not going to be your boss for long, the only reason I'm staying is so you can finish up your degree. My thinking was that I would give her permission to not talk about it, knowing that part of her wanted to, while reminding her that I was doing her a huge favor. I hoped that this would make it feel safe to talk to me about it. My prediction panned out. She started talking like I was her father confessor. The number of drinks she had downed before I got there helped, I'm sure. She spilled all her frustrations with her boyfriend. I ordered another round and listened. He was boring, didn't want to do anything. She wondered if he liked anything about her other than having sex with her. He was an underachiever. The whole nine yards. I listened very sympathetically. I was a researcher, but in school I had taken some courses in psychotherapy and I knew how to be a good listener. Man, did I ever appreciate those courses now. As I hoped, the more she confided in me, the more she trusted me, and the more vulnerable she became. That made me feel guilty for a moment. I was purposefully trying to get her to become vulnerable to me so that I could successfully seduce her. But then again, I had just agreed to delay my great experiment for her. The way I looked at it, she owed me a little of what that commitment was going to be, making it harder for me to get for the next 3 weeks pussy. When the well of frustration started to run dry, I reached over and put a sympathetic hand on her. Rather than reach for her shoulder as otherwise I might, I reached for the back of her neck. Her reaction was immediate and dramatic. You'd think I had just touched her nipples. She immediately closed her eyes and pushed back into my hand. She had the look of a woman masturbating. Excellent. I let my hand linger for a few seconds, then dropped it down to touch her hand as if I had no idea that would happen. Her thoughts were confused. Part of her was aroused now, especially in her well-served condition. Part of her was recoiling, as I was still her boss. I'm sorry, I said. I shouldn't have just touched you like that. It's just, well, I've wished for a long time that I wasn't your boss, because I would really like to get to know you. I made and held direct eye contact, signaling my honesty and seriousness. I didn't have to lie about wanting to boink her. Well, I... she stammered. Her thoughts indicated that hadn't noticed me in that way before, but neither did she signal any inherent aversion to the idea. I just have thought of you as my boss. And you need to stop thinking of me as your boss, because I am not. I said. Until you get all your data, all we're going to work on is your stuff, you call the shots. You may as well be my boss. I reached for the back of her neck again, and said. Okay? She didn't answer. Apparently the neck was a major erogenous zone for her, because once again all she could think about was how good it felt to have my hand touch her there, the way I was touching her. She was becoming aroused quickly. Hoping I wasn't jumping the gun and blowing it all, I took the next step. Please forgive me, I said, then stood up and kissed her, keeping my hand gently stroking her neck. She had a flash of momentary resistance, then gave in to the increasing arousal and kissed me back. My tongue found hers and we explored each other with them. I held her kiss for a long time, before becoming conscious that we were still in a bar and were starting to attract attention. I broke the kiss, but kept my hand on her neck and said, You have no idea how long I've wanted to do that. Then I dived in and kissed her again. After a few more minutes, her mind suddenly remembered we were out in public. I broke the kiss and said, Geez, I completely forgot that we're in public. Can I buy you a drink somewhere more private? She was turning red as she realized the number of people had been watching us French. She wanted to get out of there at all costs. Thus she quickly agreed, without even thinking through all of the implications. I put my arm around her, rubbing her neck as much as possible, and walked towards my apartment. I don't even remember what we talked about on the short walk. My focus was on keeping the fire stoked. I brought her to my apartment. As soon as I got in the door, I turned on her and grabbed her face with one hand and her neck with the other, and pushed my tongue into her mouth again. An instant's hesitation was replaced with avid reciprocation. When I finally broke the kiss, I said, Geez, I should at least let you in and show you around. Plus, I promise you a drink. I walked towards the kitchen. She walked in and looked around. I always wondered what your place would look like, she said. She wasn't stupid. She knew where this was headed, and while she hadn't necessarily decided to go through with it, she wasn't resisting. She took off her jacket, then sat on the sofa. Fortunately, the sofa was clear. I hadn't expected company when I left the house in the morning, and my apartment was looking lived in. I am not a slob, however, so I didn't have to worry about turning her off with dirty underwear lying on the floor. She crossed her legs and sat back. I think she knew that her legs looked good, that this called attention to her heels, and that it made her skirt ride up. I say I think I knew, because while I was in the kitchen I ditched my hat. It was time to fly blind the rest of the way. I came out with two glasses of a fancy aperitif that I had gotten as a gift and never drank. I hoped it would be good. It didn't matter, we both took one sip from our glasses and put them down so we could kiss. I kept touching her neck whenever possible. She started to run her hands up and down the safer parts of my body. I decided to try kissing her neck. Yup, I could feel her involuntarily curl her hips up when I started to kiss her there. She liked that. So I kept doing it. I would kiss her on the mouth, then I would kiss her on the neck, and back. She was into it now. While I was kissing her neck, I started to let my fingers run up and down her still-clothed breasts. On the second pass, I could feel nipples rising in response. As I kissed her mouth, I reached for her buttons and undid two of them. Then I returned to her neck, and slipped my hand under her blouse and bra and touched the skin of her breasts. They were amazing. Her breasts were just larger than my hand could hold and firm, the firmness of youth and physical conditioning. Her nipples were wonderfully erect and responsive. I went to kiss her mouth again, but she uncrossed her legs and slipped back onto the couch. I slipped over on top of her. She reached around me with both of her arms and held me to kiss me. I had just enough freedom of movement to be able to continue playing with her breasts the whole time. She then began to run her hands around my head and my back, and she started to kiss me on my cheeks and neck. Then she started to unbutton my buttons. I pulled back for a minute, and we both looked into each other's eyes, calmly, consensually, while we undid each other's buttons. I was done first, head start, and waited for her to finish. She then pulled my shirt off entirely. I then reached around behind her to undo her bra. She helpfully lifted up so that I could reach more easily. Then ran my hands along the tops of her shoulders, catching the fabric of her open shirt as I went, and slid them along the length of her torso so that the fabric wouldn't obstruct any of her body. Then I lifted her bra up so that it lay above instead of over her breasts. They were beautiful. I reached down and began to kiss them, then ran my tongue over them and sucked her nipples. I looked up at her for a moment to see if I should maintain the next stroking, but one look at her closed eyes and the faraway look of someone enjoying pleasurable sensations told me that I needn't concern myself with her neck anymore. She began to run her fingers over the front of my pants, just the legs at first, but then allowing increasingly lingering passes over the middle. She pushed me off her for a second so she could use both hands to unzipper and unbuckle my pants, then lay back down so I could continue to enjoy her breasts while she slipped her hand into my boxers and began stroking my penis. Taking this cue, I let my hand slide up and down her thighs while my mouth kept working on her breasts. Each pass, I pushed up a little more on her skirt so that I could reach that much higher up the next time. Eventually, I was able to reach the delicate V where her legs joined. I began to stroke the outside of her panties. They started to accumulate dampness, and her hips started to gyrate in rhythm with my stoking. Again, she initiated the next step. She pushed me gently to signal she wanted me to get off of her, which I did. Then she slipped off the couch onto the floor, pushing the coffee table away to make room, and took my pants and shoes off completely. She kissed me while she stroked my cock, then she knelt down and took it into her mouth. From time to time, she would stop and run her tongue up and down its length and lick my scrotum, but mostly she would run it into and out of her mouth, like a vagina with a tongue. She surprised me with how much she was able to swallow at once without effort, and she used her tongue on it while it was inside her. This girl knew how to give head. I just lay back and enjoyed the sensation, trying not to pop off already. And the whole time she sucked, she was vigorously rubbing her clit through her underwear to maintain arousal. I stopped her when I sensed that just a little more of that amazing blowjob and I'd be done for the night, well, for a few hours anyway. I simply said, "My turn," and led her to sit on the couch. Then I reached up under her skirt and pulled her panties off. She pulled up her skirt so it wouldn't get wet, but thankfully she moved it out of the way rather than taking it off. Then she spread her legs wide apart and watched me. I started by touching her pussy with my fingers, stroking it, pulling it gently open, while moving a few stray pubic hairs out of the way. I just wanted to see it. Then using two fingers to help me open her up, I began to lick her clitoris with my tongue. As I continued to lick her, I slipped one finger into her vagina, while I let the other one tweak her left nipple. I peeked up at one point, which confirmed what her body language told me she was doing. She was laying back, eyes closed, in an advanced state of pleasure, just enjoying my stimulation of her genitals. She had one hand gently resting on me, perhaps to encourage my continuation, while the other was dropped over her head, bent at a right angle, in a pose that suggested sweet submission. I was determined to keep licking her until she came. I started to speed up my oral ministrations, and I felt the tempo of her grinding hips increase. Then after a few minutes I felt her body stiffen, and then felt ripples of contractions, accompanied by moans spasm across her body. Success. I stopped licking when I felt her orgasm start. As soon as it ended, she popped up and reached for me to embrace and kiss me deeply. Then she dropped one of her hands free of the embrace and stroked my penis with it, in case it needed additional stimulating before I entered her. It didn't, but it didn't complain either. Then she let go of me and lay back on the couch, legs open wide, and gave me a naughty little smile. I smiled back and leaned towards her, still on my knees, and slid my dick into her now dripping wet pussy. I stroked in and out of her body. I started leaning into her to be close to her face, but then I knelt straight up so I could see what I was doing. Wow. Long blonde hair, straight but now sprawled out in several directions. Beautiful face. Clear pale skin, now pink from sexual flush. Perfect, firm breasts. Dark pink nipples, standing erect. Flat stomach. Gentle curving inward at the waist, then outward towards the hips. Yellow skirt, scrunched up into a band of fabric just a few inches wide near her waist. Blonde pubic hair, bikini waxed. Athletic, shapely, legs, one to each side of me, ending in 4-inch black heels somewhere behind me. And my penis sliding in and out of her pussy, which was had turned almost angry red as it was flush with blood from her orgasm. I soaked that in for a few minutes, at which point I could feel the excitement was about to put me over the top. I leaned in towards her so I could kiss her again. She reached to put her arms around me again. I stepped up the pace of my thrusts. She could sense what was happening, so she spread her legs apart farther still and tried to reach for me with every thrust, helping me push deeper inside her. As soon as she started that, I reached my climax, and came deep inside her. I lay on the couch next to her. We kissed a little and made small talk. I asked if she was going to be missed at home.
"Are you throwing me out?"
she asked, sounding hurt. Damn it, no hat. What was she thinking?
"No.
I just don't want you to get in trouble with your boyfriend for being gone," I stammered.
"Fuck him,"
she said. Phew, that was close.
"I'd rather you fuck me,"
I said, smiling. "Again?" she giggled.
"Okay, I accept,"
I smiled. I held her hand, led her back to my bedroom, and we made love again before falling asleep. The next morning, Jessie was a little weirded out by waking up in bed with her boss. It's not that she regretted or didn't remember the night before, it's just that the way she was feeling last night, the fact that I was her boss wasn't as important. Now, with the thought of going back to work on Monday a little more salient, it seemed to matter a lot more. She started trying to explain her discomfort, but didn't know what to say. Even without my hat, I had a pretty good idea what she was thinking.
"I understand, having a relationship on the outside will complicate things at work,"
I said.
"Tell you what, how about we agree not to meet like this again until after your data is collected and I leave DOD? Then, if we still feel this way, we can decide what comes next. Okay?"
Her facial expression suggested relief, and that seemed like a good idea to her. We got dressed and I took her out for breakfast. I wore my hat, just so I wouldn't screw up anything too badly. I had come close a couple of times already. I subtly suggested that she dump her boyfriend, not necessarily to be with me but because he wasn't good enough for her. That resonated with her. I knew that she would do just that. Good for her. She was going to make some guy extremely happy, and if the jerk she was with now didn't appreciate her, he didn't deserve her. After breakfast, I walked her to her apartment. I gave her a peck on the cheek and said,
"Okay, that's it for 3 weeks. Until I am no longer your boss, we are just co-workers. Okay?"
"Okay," she said, although she and I both knew that it wasn't so simple. It's not like either of us would forget that we had sex, and pretty damn good sex at that. She turned, gave a little wave, and headed up. As I walked home, I thought about my trusty little hat, and all the opportunities it might afford, perhaps with a little refining. Then I thought about Jessie. She was pretty hot, and she sucked a mean dick. I actually might contact her again when the 3 weeks were up. But I kind of doubted it. I was expecting to have a lot more options available to me by then.
Chapter 02.
The Traveling Sales Girl. I was anxious to take advantage of the possibilities I was afforded by my new mind-reading machine, but I had promised my student assistant, Jessie, that I wouldn't quit my job at the Department of Defense until she finished collecting her dissertation data. I didn't want to get screwed over by my leaving before she was done, especially after the great sex we had. She had asked for 3 weeks to finish up. Part of the deal was that we agreed not to have any further sexual relations until I was no longer her boss. The weekend after the third week, I had made arrangements to stay at my family's cottage in the lake country north of the city, thinking I might take Jessie, who had recently dumped her loser boyfriend, up with me. But on Thursday of the third week, Jessie told me that she wasn't quite done yet. It was going to take her until the following Tuesday or Wednesday at least before she could wrap it up. That was fine, I wasn't really surprised, but it meant I was going up to the cottage alone. I was a little disappointed, but I had spent a lot of good times up at that cottage. If nothing else, I would get some nice relaxation. But I tossed my mind-reading hat into the car, just in case. I arrived late Friday night. I turned on the main power switch and started airing out the musty smell that accumulates when the cottage goes unused for a week or two. I opened the liquor cabinet and saw that we were quite low on Canadian Club, my drink of choice. I poured a couple of drinks with the Diet Sierra Mist I had brought along, gazed at the stars, listened to my iPod a bit, and went to sleep. I slept in late Saturday morning, so the noise of outboard motors revving up to tow water skiers was already echoing across the lake when I got up. I looked out the windows and saw a couple of boats pulling skiers, and a couple more towing inner tubes, running in circles around the lake. It was hard to tell from as far away as I was, but it looked like at least one of the skiers was a shapely young woman in a teeny bikini. At least I hoped it was a woman. I was going to have to be careful not to start hitting on underage teens around here. Either way, it seemed that the best course of action was to head to the beach with my hat and see what I might find. I went back inside to look for some breakfast, and realized that besides drinking up the CC the night before, I had no milk or breakfast food. Whoever had last been at the cottage hadn't left much behind for the next person. I was going to have to run to Poser's right away that morning for supplies. Poser's was the center of activity in the lakes region. There were three lakes in close proximity, with a major highway intersection between them, and right on that corner was Poser's. It had started out as just a gas station and minimart, but the family that built it had the foresight to buy all of the other available frontage at the intersection. Thus assured that no competition sprung up nearby, and with the next town of any size 20 miles away, they had done very well with their mini-monopoly on the region. Poser's was now a mini-grocery store, liquor store, video store, bait shop, and boat shop all in one. Thus, anyone that needed anything went to Poser's, and most of the time they would have what you wanted. Whether you wanted to pay the price they were charging for it was sometimes another matter.
I had to dress to go to the store, of course, and was planning to come back and change for the beach. I don't really like running around in a swimsuit when I'm not at the lake, however, so I grabbed my clothes from the day before, which were still lying around the cottage, and threw them on to run to Poser's. What happened next only came to be because, by chance of laziness, I was not dressed like someone who was about to spend their day at the beach. I drove to Poser's and parked my car. I had been listening to my iPod through my car's stereo system, no good radio stations in the middle of nowhere, and so I stopped to unhook my equipment before running into the store. As I was pulling wires, I became aware of a red Grand Prix pulling up in the spot next to me. I looked over and saw that the driver was a young female, with blonde hair cut right to shoulder length, wearing a long-sleeved blouse made from a silky-like material. She wasn't dressed for the beach, either. She opened her door and got up, but rather than walking in, she lingered by her open door and started fumbling for something in the back seat of her car. I saw now that she was wearing a tight, pencil skirt that ended a good 6 inches above her knees. And because her skirt was so short, I noticed her thighs were really skinny. She had to be really young, no more than 22 or 23, I figured, because thighs that straight and thin are extremely rare, and most of the girls that have them are really young and haven't fully grown into their adult/post-childbirth bodies yet, fortunately. Then I figured out what she was doing. She had driven the car wearing comfortable flip-flops, but now was putting on heels before proceeding into the store. She had to be there on business of some sort, I thought. A girl that young, driving around in the middle of nowhere, my guess was that she was a traveling sales rep. It was the kind of job that a girl might take right after graduating from college, needing to start somewhere, and abandon as soon as a better job came along. It was only weeks after most colleges held their commencements. It might very well be her first month on the job. And she was so skinny and cute, my mouth was beginning to water. Remember my hat, which I had conveniently left on the passenger seat of my car, I donned my mind-reading machine and looked over in her direction. I quickly learned that she was working for the alcohol distributor that supplied Poser's, and was going to meet with someone named Frank to try to talk them into picking up a new designer malt beverage they were selling. I also saw that she had 3 more stops to make that day, even though it was Saturday, and that she was none too happy about it. Impulsively, I got out of my car and waved in her direction. "Hey, you look like you're working too," I said. "Are you supposed to be meeting with Ed now, too?" She turned towards the sound, not expecting that someone would be talking to her, and with her second heel still not completely on right. "No, I'm here to talk to Frank," she said. I could feel her curiosity as to who or what I was, but she was being careful, being a woman traveling alone. "Frank, is that the liquor guy?" I asked. "I'm Rick," I lied. "With Lakeside Sports, we're the bait and lure supplier." Damn, I thought, this could be bad. Yeah, it's plausible that a bait salesman might be here, but I don't know very much about fishing and I certainly couldn't be sure that any other places on her list would sell any. I wasn't sure I could keep this story up. I definitely had to remember that I had told her that my name was Rick, it isn't. "Hi," she said, slamming her door and walking around to the front of the car, waiting for me to come alongside before walking in. She was thinking she would rather go in with someone else than have to initiate contact in the store alone. "I'm Lauren from Northwoods Distributing. We supply beer, wine, and liquor." "Ooh, excellent," I laughed. "I bet you get much better samples than I do." "Not so much," she laughed back. "I can sell it, but I can't drink on the job." We walked in together chatting breezily. She went to the service counter to meet with Frank. I excused myself and headed over to the fishing section, saying I was looking for Ed. I saw her go to a back area with Frank, at which point I ducked into the fishing aisle, picked up a couple of colorful-looking lures and a pocket knife, and quickly paid for them at the back register. These would serve as my samples. Then I wandered out to the main floor, and nonchalantly poured myself a cup of coffee from the self-service bar which was strategically placed just in front of the door. A few minutes later she came back out, shook hands with Frank and started heading out. I headed for the checkout line, and called out. "Hey Lauren, can I buy you a cup of coffee?" She may have forgotten about me. I could see her thoughts were about her next stop, 15 miles away in a place called Northport, not its real name, either. But she stopped when she heard me. My hat told me that she had felt less uncomfortable initiating the cold call when she was with another, she thought, sales rep, again. Probably meant this job was new to her. "No, thanks," she said. "I've had 2 already today. Any luck with Ed?" "Not so much," I said, pulling a lure out of my pocket. "He said they don't have shelf space for my new red jigglers." That sounded like a lure name, didn't it? I just hoped that the checkout girl minded her own business and didn't expose my bullshit. She did. I paid for my coffee and I walked out with her. "I've been doing this circuit for 5 years now," I lied. "So let me guess, your next stop is Northport." I paused while her brain responded. As I had hoped, it gave away the next stops on her itinerary. "Then Big Marsh, and finally Culver City, right?" She looked at me dumbfounded, and stammered. "What, how?" "I'm telling ya, Lauren, it doesn't matter if you're selling snow plows or cigarettes, it's the same route." I kept laying it on. "These towns out here are so spread out, it's the only way that makes sense to hit them without backtracking 20 miles out of your way every time."
"Really?"
she asked innocently. "Everyone runs the same route?" Her mind retraced the route she had taken the day before.
"Yup, just like—"
And I repeated back the route she had thought about from her previous day.
"All the same."
We were by our cars now, and I could tell that she was interested in any other wisdom I might have to impart on how this traveling sales gig worked. I hoped I could lie well enough long enough to pull it off. Tell you what, with gas over $3 a gallon, and you probably have to head back over this way anyway, why don't we carpool the last three stops? I said. I'm sure you're smart enough not to get into a car with a man you don't know, so I'll let you drive. What do you say? Her thoughts told me that she actually wouldn't have had to stop back over this way, because she lived in Evans Point, but it also told me that she really wanted to know any inside tips that I could give her on how to service her territory. And she figured that if she was driving, she wouldn't be in any danger, unless I had a gun or something. How do I know you are who you say? Can I see your card? She asked. Oh. Of course I didn't have a card. I laughed as convincingly as I could. A card? Lady, you obviously don't know anything about fishing guys. I used to give them all cards, and they all just went into the wastebasket. You gotta get to know them by name, then they remember you. A business card is just too office-like, and a lot of these guys left office jobs to run these little shops and go fishing as much as possible. I put my arms up in the air like I was under arrest. But you're smart to ask. You're welcome to search me if you like. I smiled, then reached into my pocket and pulled out the knife, saying, All I'm carrying is my fishing knife. She was a little nervous, but I was doing a good job of portraying the down-home quality she expected of a fishing lure salesman, and feeling confident because she was driving and realizing that I hadn't expected to run into her. Either she decided to let me ride along with her. As she drove, I made up stories about selling lures in the region while subtly probing for information. One thing you should understand about how brains work, your brain stores all sorts of ideas, which have connections of varying strengths to each other. When you activate one idea, you usually see activation of ideas closely related to it. That's why you can't tell a child having nightmares to not think about the bogeyman. Saying so reactivates the concepts associated with bogeymen. You need to tell them to think about something else, preferably something specific, for them to start thinking differently. It also so happens that language activates ideas, which means that you can evoke certain thoughts by asking certain questions. For instance, if you ask a girl any question about her boyfriend, she will involuntarily also think those concepts that most closely associated with boyfriend. If the word boyfriend leads to thoughts of love, marriage, and kids, I'm wasting my time. A lot of girls, however, even if they love their boyfriends, harbor some degree of belief that they can do better. My success often depends on whether I am able to exploit that belief. Over the next hour and a half, I learned a lot about her. Some of it she volunteered, some of it I picked up using my mind reader. I learned that she had indeed just graduated from college, that she had had a boyfriend in college but right now they were in different cities and their future prospects weren't good, that she was living alone, that one of the reasons she had taken this job was because she loved water skiing and this kept her close to the lakes, and that she had hoped to finish up her runs by 1 o'clock in the afternoon so she could go water skiing with some friends of hers that had a boat. In fact, she was already wearing her swimsuit under her business clothes. Unfortunately for her, it was 1:30 when we finished the last stop of the day, and she still had to take me back to my car over at Poser's. She excused herself and called someone on her cell phone. Using my mind reader, I discerned that her friends were anxious to get going to another lake and didn't want to wait another 45 minutes to an hour for her to join them. She was very disappointed at not getting to ski today. She didn't talk much as she began to drive me back. So you're a skier, huh? I asked, building on something she had said earlier in the day. Yeah, I was hoping to go today, but these stops took too long. She said. My friends left without me. That's too bad. I said. But these stops always take too long. Rule number one. It will always take you an hour longer than you think it should to do a circuit. I paused for a moment as if I was thinking. It's too bad you don't have your suit with you. I could tow you with my boat. I could see her interest peaked. You have a ski boat? She asked. Well, it's my uncle's, really. He has a cottage on the lake right over by Poser's. I usually live in Middleton, I lied, but I am staying up at the family cottage this weekend. There's a nice ski boat up there. I used to drive while my cousin skied all the time. That part was at least half true, which is why my car had a hitch on the back. She was thinking that we probably didn't have a swivel ski and release line, since most people don't, so my offer wasn't that compelling, but she was wrong. My one cousin used to ski in the show. I would always drive her while she practiced her swiveling. That was half true. I had sometimes done the release line, but someone else was always driving. Now she was thinking. She would normally have at most a half hour of time on the swivel when sharing turns with friends. Here, she could possibly swivel for the whole afternoon if we had the ski. I swivel, too. Do you have a swivel ski? She asked. I told her the truth. I would think so. My cousin lives on the coast now and only skis when she's here. All the other skis are kept in the shed. I don't know why that one wouldn't be. Well, actually. She was thinking that she would tell me she had her suit on, but starting to feel a little adventurous after all the risks she was taking with a man she just met, she instead loosed a few buttons of her shirt and pulled it open to flash me a glimpse of her suit. I'm wearing my suit right now. She glanced over at me with a little smile on her face in part, to see how I reacted to her flashing me her bikini. I was suitably impressed. I was getting her to trust me, but I wasn't getting her to like me yet. This was my chance. Well, why didn't you say so? I said. I wasn't gonna put the boat in just for myself, but I'd love to have someone to tow. I'll get my car, we'll go get my boat, you can help me put the boat in, and you can ski until you can't stand up anymore. Her love of skiing, plus a little anger at her fickle friends, outweighed her common sense, and so that's exactly what we did. Because it was easier to have two people doing it, one to drive the boat off the trailer while the other backed up the car, it was easy to convince her to jump into my car while we went to get the boat. In her excitement, she wasn't thinking ahead to possibly being stranded later. I hitched up the boat and quickly changed while she loaded up ski gear. Then I drove to the launch and got ready to back the boat in. She stripped off her work clothes to reveal a tiny bikini, with bright colored stripes at a funny angle. Her breasts weren't very big, which I had expected, but she was wonderfully skinny, her thighs were amazing, and her flat belly and curved waistline were wonderful too. I parked the car, got into the boat, and hooked up a line. She started with regular skis first to warm up. I could tell right away she was good. After a half hour, we switched to swivel. This required a lot more work on my part. To swivel, you hook the tow rope onto your foot, which means if you fall, you will get dragged by the boat. Thus, you have a release on the line itself, but as the driver, I had to be both watching where I was going with the boat and watching backwards to know when to release the line. But the payoff was having a legitimate reason to stare at Lauren in her tiny bikini all afternoon. She swiveled for almost 3 hours, which is an amazing feat of stamina. Even if you don't fall a lot, you get really beaten up in the water. At last, she was too tired to continue, and I helped her into the boat. I gave her a hug when she came on board, even though she was wet, and said, "You were great. You must have been doing this for a long time." My hat told me she was a little taken aback by the hug, but was eating up my compliments. That was fine, I had broken the first ground. "Come on, I'll grill us up some dinner," I said. She was starving from being in the water that long, so she didn't even protest. She helped me pull the boat out of the water, then we went back to my cottage and I started the grill. She had grabbed a ski bag from her car when we switched cars, and from it she produced some dry clothes to wear. She went into the bathroom and took a quick shower, then came out wearing a green halter top and black shorts, plus flip-flops. With her wet hair combed straight back, and her shapely waist and belly out in the open, she was really hot. She came out and leaned on the railing to talk to me while I grilled some chicken breasts. I had poured 2 cc in soda while she was in the shower, and now gave her one, saying, "Have you ever tasted Canadian Club? I don't usually like whiskey," she said, refusing it. "Well, of course you don't, if you haven't had Canadian Club. Nothing else is worth drinking. Try it. I even made it with diet soda." She was very thirsty, and I wasn't offering her anything else, so she took a sip. I could tell with my hat that it wasn't her favorite, but it did taste much better than whiskey she'd had before and could at least drink it. Being that thirsty didn't hurt, I'm sure. And if she was unfamiliar with drinking whiskey, she wouldn't realize how fast it could get her drunk. I did. She practically gulped down the first glass because she was so thirsty. I made her a second, but I also brought her a bottle of water. She made short order of the water, then started drinking her second drink at a more normal pace. But I could see it was starting to have its effect, especially on an empty stomach. I surreptitiously turned down the heat on the grill slightly to slow the cooking. She had two down and was starting a third drink by the time dinner was ready. On her empty stomach, she was already starting to buzz, and the bulk of the alcohol hadn't hit her bloodstream yet. Soon, driving home would be out of the question even if she wanted to. She sat on a two-seater rocking chair with her plate to eat. I sat next to her. The alcohol was starting to make her giggly, which was okay because it was giving me excuses to touch her. She would start laughing at something and bend over. I would respond by laughing along and, when it wasn't obviously inappropriate, putting my hand on her bare back. After we ate, I took her empty plate and got her another drink. I started to pour them thinner. She was too ahead of me, and I was worried she would get so drunk that she would get sick or something. When I handed it to her, my hat told me she suddenly realized that she was in no condition to drive, and that asking me to take her to her car didn't make sense anymore. I quickly started talking about the lake and the cottage before she processed that thought any further. As I continued talking with her on the rocker, getting increasingly touchy-feely as she got increasingly inebriated, I had the original inspiration for what would become a common technique in later days. I waited for a pause in the conversation, then I sang badly, as always, a line from a pretend country music song, "I like the things that you do to me, but the pill won't protect me from an STD. The idea was to evoke her connotations to the keywords pill and STD, to simultaneously test her birth control and STD status. Her thoughts seemed pretty clear to me to indicate that she was on the pill and didn't have any social diseases. Okay, I thought all systems go. When I had an opportunity, I put my hand on her head and stroked her hair. She looked at me in a kind of knowing fashion when I did that. I moved in to kiss her. She kissed me back, although not with great conviction. I worked a couple more kisses into our conversation, then suggested that we move inside to avoid mosquitoes. I sat on the sofa, hoping she would sit next to me, but she didn't. Instead, she looked at me with a twinkle in her eye and knelt down in front of me. She reached to untie my swim trunks, then pulled them down to my feet. Then she gently picked up my not yet fully erect penis and gently licked it. Gotta love them millennials. A lot of them don't even consider oral sex to be sex. Once she had my penis erect, she started to move it in and out of her mouth. She was not as accomplished at giving head as Jesse had been, but what she lacked in experience she made up for in enthusiasm. Her head bobbed up and down above my crotch like a piston, with her hand moving in sync to ensure constant stimulation. Being so skinny, I was able to reach around to her back while she had me in her mouth and untie the back of her halter top. When she felt the top slacken off of her breasts, she looked up at me while still sucking, then let go for a second to slip the top off of her head before continuing to suck me some more. I rubbed her nipples between my fingers, one nipple in each hand, while she kept sucking. Her thinking, I still had on my hat, was telling me that she was thinking this would be her thank you for the skiing, the dinner and all that. Okay, I thought, I'm fine with that, but I still wanted to go all the way with her. But at this point her thoughts coming to me through my hat were beginning to distract me from enjoying the moment, so I took the hat off. She was definitely persistent. My dick started to get that extra hardness that sets in shortly before orgasm. She must have been waiting for that signal, because she responded by increasing the tempo of her sucking. I was not going to be able to hold back against this pleasurable stimulation for long. But as more alcohol entered her bloodstream, the additional head bobbing must have made her dizzy. She suddenly reeled backwards and had to catch herself with one hand to keep from falling the rest of the way to the floor. I seized the opportunity. I quickly grabbed a couch cover, threw it on the floor, and then moved towards Lauren and nudged her to the floor. Her breasts may have been small, but her nipples were substantial and at last I could put them in my mouth. At the same time, I rubbed my hands over the crotch of her shorts. She may not have been expecting to be the recipient of such attention, but it must have felt good enough that she didn't protest. I switched over to put the farther breast in my mouth, and at the same time I untied her shorts and started to slide them down. She lifted her butt to help, so I guess she was on board with it. With her pants off, I now slid my finger along her thighs without letting up on my nipple sucking. I snuck a peek at her face. She was lying back with eyes closed, just enjoying the pleasure sensations I was giving her. Good. Those slender thighs, I still think of how soft and silky the skin on them felt, while at the same time not having an ounce of flabby flesh attached. The skinny thighs also made it easier to slip a hand in between, and in short order I was touching the warm spot between her legs. At that point I did finally let her nipples slip out of my hungry mouth and slid further down. I don't know that she knew what to expect, but she parted her hips to accommodate whatever it might be. I started running my tongue over her labia, which was still closed. Shortly thereafter her clitoris began to rise, and I concentrated on it. I held one of her butt cheeks in each of my hands and used them to help guide her pussy to my tongue. Because she was so skinny, I was able to reach my thumbs around and part her lips with them while I was licking her. Once I did, I ran my tongue along the insides of her as well. I heard her say, "Oh," a few times after that. I started to feel her hips gyrate rhythmically. I increased the speed and firmness of my administrations. Then I felt her have her orgasm. While she was still spasming, I slipped up to be eye level with her, and slid my penis into her now ready vagina. I was thrusting in and out of her before her orgasm was even finished. She reached her arms around me and kissed me, as many women seem to do after orgasm. Then she loosened her grip and lay back, because I was pumping her for all I was worth. The lovely little thing did her best to hold on. I felt her try to open her legs wider, but then I saw her wince. I'm sure they were sore from all that skiing. "It's okay," I said, and she relaxed her legs again. I had plenty of room to work between her skinny thighs. I felt my orgasm coming. I shortened my thrust while pushing my penis as far into her as I could reach. And then I came. She embraced me again once she felt me come, and I collapsed on top of her. "Well, that was a nice surprise," she said, and kissed me on the cheek. "Man, you can say that again," I grinned. We lay there holding each other for a few minutes, then she got up to go to the bathroom. When she was up, I picked up the couch cover. I waited for her outside the bathroom, then led her back to one of the bedrooms rather than sleep on the floor. I lay next to her, and she played with my face and giggled. Then she curled herself around my one arm and pushed her back into me to snuggle. I just lay there for a few minutes, letting her hold me, then I felt her grip go limp. I guess I'll never know if she passed out or simply fell asleep, tired from all the skiing. With her asleep, I realized that I hadn't really thought about how she would eventually get back home either. It really wasn't that late. I decided I would fetch her car from Poser's. I found her keys in her bag, wrote a quick note in case she woke up, then grabbed one of the old cottage bikes and rode it to the store. Then I opened her trunk, threw as much of the bike into it as would fit, and drove her car back to the cottage. She was still sleeping when I got there. The next morning I awoke before she did, so I got dressed, put on my hat, and started to make coffee and breakfast. The smell probably woke her up. I had put her clothes in the bedroom for her, she dressed and came out. She wasn't very happy. Her thoughts were angry, mad at me for taking advantage of her, mad at herself for getting so drunk that I could. "Would you like some coffee?" I asked. "That wasn't a very nice thing you did last night," she said, cutting right to the chase. I stopped cooking and turned to look at her. "I'm sorry you feel that way. I really enjoyed last night. I guess maybe you drank more than you meant to, but I had just as many as you had." "That wasn't true. That's the other thing we do up here, we use the lake and we drink." That part was true. With my hat on, I could tell that she knew that I was right. A big part of having a cottage is drinking. Her thoughts told me that I had had previous experience drinking at cottages, and even that it wasn't the first time she gave a guy a blowjob after drinking with him at a cottage. But this was the first time it had ended with full intercourse, and certainly the first time with a guy she just met that morning. "You tried to get me drunk so that you could seduce me," she accused. She was right. I had purposefully manipulated my behavior in order to maximize my chances of getting her to have sex with me. I was being a con man, a swindler, a grifter. A grifter with a very special tool that made things possible, which was at the moment perched loosely on my head. That's when I first started thinking of myself as the gifted grifter. "Surely you don't think it's odd that a guy would want to sleep with a beautiful young girl like yourself? Look, I'm sorry if you regret it now, I sure don't," I said. "But if all you want to do is get out of here, you can. I went and fetched your car last night, and it's parked outside." She was relieved that she didn't still have to negotiate for me to take her to her car. Although she was mad at me for taking advantage of her, the fact that I had fetched her car led her to entertain the thought that maybe I wasn't all bad. It made her get even more mad at herself for getting that drunk. I watched her think, "I'll never drink whiskey again." But she certainly didn't want to spend any more time with me. I didn't bother offering to let her ski again. I just told her how to get back to the main highway. In 5 minutes she was gone. I ate the food I made, then quickly packed up, closed up the cabin, and headed back to the city. I wanted to get out of there as soon as I could, lest she come back to confront me again, perhaps with backup. Along the way I did a lot of thinking. In some states, having sex with a girl who's drunk enough constitutes statutory rape. I don't think she was that drunk, and even if she were, it was a matter of he said she said. I had seen in her thoughts that she had started to blow me willingly, she just hadn't expected to end up having intercourse. She didn't know that I knew she was protected, among other things, and while I knew she didn't have any diseases, she didn't know that about me. No, I don't. It was too bad that she was so angry about it in the morning. Neither of us had had complaints while it was happening. I felt a tinge of guilt, knowing that most of what I had told her was a lie, tailor-made to make me appear to be her sort of person. But I hadn't coerced her into having sex with me, and I hadn't forced her to drink those drinks. Aided and abetted maybe, and definitely not coerced. But the experience taught me that I was definitely going to have to be a lot more careful about these kinds of situations in the future. I had used a false name, but I had taken her to my actual family cottage. All anyone would have had to do is call the property's owner of record, and they would quickly have found out who I really was. If I didn't want to end up in big trouble or even dead, I was going to have to be much more difficult to trace from now on. When I got back to the city, I did a number of things. I purchased several sets of phony identification on the internet. I purchased several prepaid cell phones. I topped off with cards that I had purchased with cash, so there was no credit card connected to them. I obtained a couple of prepaid Visa cards and other names. And I resolved that in the last few days before I quit my job, I would try to devise an even smaller version of my thought reading machine. Later that week I left my job at the DOD. The moment I left was for all intents and purposes the last time I used my real name. From that point on, 24/7, I was the Gifted Grifter.
Chapter 03.
Viva Las Vegas. In my last few days at the Department of Defense, I worked on perfecting the secret discovery that would transform my life, a receive that could read people's minds. Recognizing the opportunities my invention would afford, I had wanted to quit immediately, but I had promised my graduate assistant, Jessie, that I would wait 3 weeks so that she could finish collecting her dissertation data first. I would have honored that promise even if I hadn't seduced her with help from my mind reader. But it was now week 4, and I was running out of patience. The extra time did serve me well, though. While my original mind reader, which I concealed by building it into an old baseball hat, worked fine, I wanted something even more portable. Scrounging micro components from various departments, I was able to embed a mind reader into the frame of a pair of glasses. I actually built 2 mind reading glasses, one with clear lenses and 1 pair of sunglasses. The eyeglass version had a couple of differences from the hat size version besides size. For one, I only had space for a tiny battery, so I added an on-off switch hidden on the earpiece. This way, I wear them all the time but save battery by only turning them on when I needed them. Second, I had added a tiny message recorder circuit, like an answering machine might have. I knew that I would be using a number of different names and identities in the future. This feature would allow me to leave reminders for myself as to whom I was supposed to be. On Wednesday morning, my mind reading hat told me that Jessie had finished collecting her data but didn't want to tell me that she had. See, after we had sex the first time, we had agreed to a moratorium on sleeping together again so long as I was still her boss. In the interim, she had decided that while she liked me and all, I wasn't a good prospect for a long-term relationship and she was much too serious and goal-oriented to invest time in a man that she didn't perceive to be a realistic marriage candidate. Too bad, because she had a great body and gave awesome head, but she was right. Monogamy was not in my future plans. My hat told me that her plan was to tell me at the end of the day Friday and have somewhere else she needed to be that night, although she wasn't sure what that was, having recently dumped her boyfriend. That was just 2 wasted days to me, so I decided to press the issue. "Okay, Jessie," I said. "I said I'd give you 3 weeks, but now you're over time. Are you gonna be done soon?"
Yeah, I hope to be done by the end of the week," she said.
"Hope to?
You'd better be," I said in a joking tone.
"Look, as soon as I quit here, I'm off to Vegas, and I want to book a flight for this Friday. Do you think you can be done by then?" As I intended, this gave her the out she was looking for. She wouldn't have to deal with the sex moratorium if I was taking myself out of the picture. She had no idea that by the weekend, she wouldn't be even able to find me.
"Well, I'll be sure to find a way," she said, knowing that she was actually already done. "You've been very nice to me to stay on just so that I had time enough to finish. What can I say? I'm just a nice guy," I said.
I had recently met a girl named Lauren that probably would not have agreed. I spent the rest of the morning booking my trip to Vegas. It wasn't as outrageously expensive as I feared, booking so late. I decided that I would stay at Planet Hollywood. I had always liked it when it was Aladdin. I then spent the afternoon scrounging around for spare parts, personal documents, copies of software I had written, anything that I thought I might want once I no longer had access to the resources of the DOD. I took home 2 boxes worth of potentially useful supply. Security might be tight as to who got in and out of the facility, but we were all research scientists, and a lot of us worked on stuff at home, so nobody paid too much attention to what we took out the door with us. First thing Thursday morning, I went to find Jessie wearing my mind-reading glasses for the first time. I told her I was booked for a 7 a.m. flight the next day. If she was ready, I wanted to turn in my resignation so I could go home and pack. I watched her do some mental arithmetic and decide that if I was escorted off the premises before the end of the day, she should be able to avoid me and the question of renewing intimacy until I left for Vegas. Thus she came clean.
"Yes, I am finally done," she said. "Thank you so much for letting me finish before you leave."
I had to work hard to refrain from laughing out loud. I knew from my glasses that she was thinking,
"I don't know how I can ever repay you."
But of course the obvious answer would be that she could start by sleeping with me again, and she didn't want to do that. I decided not to make her squirm.
"Well, you're not done yet," I said. "It will take you longer than you think to do the analysis and write it up. But I'm confident you will do fine. Good luck on your final defense."
I felt her wonder whether I would come to her final defense. She was torn between being genuinely grateful for the favor I had done her and wanting to avoid being around me so the sex question couldn't come up again. That's the biggest problem with sleeping with your advisor. It's hard to reject them on a personal level when you are indebted to them on a professional one.
"Well, I'm off to turn in my resignation," I announced to break the silence. "Who knows if and when we'll meet again?"
Ian shook her hand.
"But you've been a great assistant, and I wish you nothing but the best."
I paused for a second, then added,
"In your career, and in your life."
I saw that my speech had left her wondering. What did I mean if I'll ever see you again? She hadn't considered that she might not see me again. And what did I mean by
in your life?
Was I trying to give her the hint that I didn't want to screw her again? Funny, but that actually ignited a twinge of competitiveness in her. Something like maybe I didn't want to have sex with her again meant I didn't think she was good enough, which made part of her want to prove otherwise. I didn't have time to exploit that little opening in her psyche, however, so I just wanted her to not have to worry about my pursuing her. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to jump her bones again. But in all likelihood, once I went underground, she and I would never cross paths again. I went up to my boss's office, turned off my mind-reading glasses. I didn't want to know what he was thinking, then marched in and handed in my resignation. He called security and stripped me of my clearance right then and there, as I knew he must. Then security escorted me to my desk with a box, and watched as I put all my personal belongings into it, making sure that I didn't take anything but what was mine. I had left all my personal things at my desk so that it wouldn't be as obvious that I had already cleaned out the good stuff the day before. Once I announced I was done, I was walked out to the parking lot and locked out of the building. At last, my new life was set to begin. Las Vegas had long been one of my favorite vacation destinations, but it wasn't going to be the same this time. It was early Friday evening, and at last my turn had been called for a seat at the highest stakes Texas Hold'em table open at the Luxor. The idea was simple: play high stakes poker, use my mind-reading glasses to know my odds of winning a particular hand, and bet accordingly. The execution was going to have to be something I worked at, however. Obviously, I couldn't just win every hand, that would get suspicious fast. Also, I had to be careful not to give away any tells while I was considering my odds. So I had decided to try a specific plan of attack. I would keep my glasses turned off and play straight up most of the time, turning them on only when the stakes of the hand got high. I was not a particularly good poker player, so I figured I'd lose enough when playing, blind, to not attract suspicion. I knew that by either winning or avoiding losing the big pots, I would come out ahead. It would just appear that I was getting lucky as to when I would get my winning hands. But I had to be sure to touch the frames of my glasses on every hand, or I'd give away when I was turning them on. Even with all that forethought, pulling it off turned out to be a more delicate balancing act than I had imagined. A couple of guys quickly didn't like the vibe they got from me and left the table shortly after I arrived. A dumb luck inside straight draw and better two pair were all I had to show for my first hour of play, and I had taken a hit when I couldn't match my pocket kings and lost to three tens. And while I was consciously touching my glasses every time, I hadn't even turned them on yet. In the second hour was the first time they came in handy. I had A8 suited in my undercards, and after the turn there was AAK3 showing. I figured my three aces would be pretty good, but one of the players ahead of put down a bigger bet than I expected.
"What is he thinking?"
I thought, and when I put on my glasses I learned he had AK under. I saved a boatload of money folding there. In the third hour, a young guy who thought a lot of himself came in and after a few hands suddenly started betting big. He scared away the rest of the table. He might have been bluffing, but we didn't have a good red on him yet. My glasses confirmed that he was bluffing, and my two pair were plenty to beat him. Having started down the path, he felt he had to stick to it, but I of course re-raised him every time. I cleaned him out. The big score came about an hour later. On the table were the 8, 9 and Jack of Hearts, Jack of Clubs, and 4 of Diamonds. A guy across the table was betting on his nut flush, A and 3 of Hearts. It never occurred to him, I know, I was reading his mind, that I could have the 10 and Queen of Hearts, which amazingly enough I did. That win put me in the neighborhood of 10 grand ahead for the night. I had promised myself that I would quit for the night if I managed to get that far. I decided to play a few more hands for politeness' sake, then cash out. Now that I wasn't concentrating on making money, I suddenly became aware of my surroundings again. I noticed that behind the rail that separates the poker room from the rest of the floor, a number of people had been watching the game. I realized this was trophy wife's row. Three guys' wives were watching their husbands play. One had medium-length blonde hair and augmented breasts, much of which were visible in the cleavage of her black, satiny halter-style top that she wore with black three-quarter-length pants and heels. A second was Asian-looking, wearing a very tight, short red dress with cutouts above the breasts, and at the waist on either side to allow more skin to show through. The third was the hottest of the bunch, long brown hair, wearing a vest-like top that exposed 3 inches of midriff, including a large diamond navel ring, and a tight miniskirt. There was a long expanse of very tan leg between the bottom of her skirt and top of her heels. Not a one of them had hit 30 yet, or else they had excellent plastic surgeons. I even overheard one of them telling the others about having taken the stripper 101 class at the Desert Passage earlier that evening, and that she had a surprise in store for her man. Fuck. I was envious of these guys, having these girls waiting for them while they played. I was going back to my room alone, obviously. I didn't have time to pick up for women and earn my living at the same time. I consoled myself that I would have plenty of time to prowl for pussy once I was back home with my 3 months or so of money in my pocket, but that didn't help me feel envious of the guys that would be getting fucked by these dolls tonight. I know I wouldn't have kept them waiting, course then again I hadn't already fucked them every day for however long they had been together, either. One thing I had going for me was the availability of variety, the spice of life. Still, I was feeling sorry for myself after I cashed out, so instead of heading straight back to my room, I went to the bar nearest the high roller area. Most of the people there were in couples or groups, but four were not three amazingly hot women and one man, who I watched sit down at the bar next to one of the women but whose body language indicated he did not know her yet. I was too naive yet to recognize what I was looking at, and I was wondering how three girls so hot could still be sitting by themselves at this bar, with no guys around hitting on them. I turned on my glasses and got a quick education. All three were scanning the crowd for potential customers. They were all high-priced prostitutes. The one closest to me was wearing a blonde wearing a red cocktail dress, short and with a plunging neckline. Sexy, but not revealing enough to stand out from the rest of the Las Vegas late evening slash after-show crowd. The second was wearing what appeared to be a blue dress, with a similar neck and hemline, but when she bent from time to time her skin would peek out from her midsection. It must have been two separate pieces. And she had red hair, my favorite, although a little darker than ideal. The third, the one talking to the guy, had her back to me, although I could make out much of an attractive face in the mirror behind the bar. I noticed she wasn't looking at him while she talked to him. She was assessing if he might be a customer or if he didn't realize she wasn't free. She had long blonde hair and wore a white, tank-like top that stopped a couple of inches short of her short, black skirt. What he was thinking was, is my microphone picking this up? He was a cop. People think that prostitution is legal in Las Vegas. It isn't. Prostitution is legal in Nevada, but only in counties with a population under 400,000. Obviously, Clark County does not qualify. That's not to say there aren't prostitutes in Vegas. It's just that they're just as illegal there as in any other city in America. And because there is big money in Vegas, there are high-end prostitutes there as well, hookers of a price and caliber you won't find in Middle America. Now, I had never in my life, up to that moment, even considered securing the services of a prostitute. There were a lot of reasons. I couldn't be sure she wasn't going to give me an awful disease. I couldn't be sure she wasn't setting me up to rip me off, a common occurrence among Vegas escort services. I couldn't be sure she wasn't a cop, and I wouldn't have had the money to afford a woman of this caliber. But suddenly, all of these issues were non-issues. With my mind reader, I could find out for certain whether she was a cop, diseased, or a con artist, and I had 10 grand in my pocket. Was there any reason not to rent a working girl for the night? Didn't I just complain about not getting laid tonight because I had spent my time making money at the poker table? Now I could use that money to rectify the situation, plus, I could, within reasonable limits, order whatever sexual experience I wanted. That in itself intrigued me greatly. Now, normally I would have gone up to the redhead, because, well, redheads are my thing. But for some reason, I didn't want to watch this cop haul the cutie at the bar off to jail, and she was getting close to falling for his bait. He was sitting on her left-hand side. I made a beeline for the chair to her right. I sidled up to the bar and announced, "Man, I could sure use a drink." This interrupted their conversation, so I continued, "But not here, I'm sick of this place." I pretended to have just noticed the guy. "Oh, sorry friend, I didn't see you there, you aren't like married or something, are you?" While I was saying this, I slipped a couple of Franklins into the girl's shirt under her arm, so that he couldn't see me do it. He kind of hemmed and hawed, but she piped right up. "No, we were just sitting here talking, we actually just met," she said with emphasis. While she was doing this, she nonchalantly crossed her arms in order to surreptitiously retrieve and identify what it was I had slipped there. Her fingers immediately recognized the feel of U.S. currency. She didn't know how much money it was, but she knew I had just slipped her some scratch. "Well, then what would it take to get a girl like you to join me for a drink over at Planet Hollywood?" I said. "You just have to ask," she said, smiling and turning towards me, gathering her purse. Her mind, however, said $3,000. She turned to the guy with a light handshake and said, "It was nice meeting you." He was a little perplexed, but responded in kind, then got up to look around for another working girl to try to entrap. As soon as he was out of earshot, I whispered to her, "That guy was a cop, you know." She was not new to this line of work. She coolly betrayed no response whatever to my statement, while whispering back, "Are you sure?" I nodded. Then she gave the other girls a sign of some sort. I have no idea what the sign was, as I didn't see her do anything unusual, but somehow she had tipped off the other two girls about there being a cop in the bar. I peeked back briefly as we filed out. Both of the other girls were collecting their things and preparing to move elsewhere. "Nice,"
I said.
What?
She asked, not knowing what I was talking about. Whatever signal you just gave the other girls. I didn't even see you do anything. She smiled. That's what makes it such a good signal. It was pretty clear that I knew she was a prostitute, so she didn't have to play coy.
How did you know he was a cop?
She asked. I saw him bust another girl last night at Mandalay Bay. I lied. Or at least, I saw her go up the elevator with him, then come back down 5 minutes later in handcuffs. Not too hard to figure out. She nodded knowingly.
Well, I guess I owe you one. She said.
I'm Heather from LA. My glasses told me she was really Julie from Oklahoma City.
I'm Tom.
I lied.
And you never did answer my question. What would it take to get a girl like you to come up to my place for a drink?
She looked at me carefully, trying now to decide whether I might not be the police.
Come on, surely there must be a way for a guy like me to have a drink with a girl like you.
I said. While I was talking, I put my arm around her in an exaggerated fashion, then subtly wrapped my hand around and placed my hand squarely on top of her breast, lingering my finger over her nipple as I let go before causing a scene. This achieved the desired effect. She decided that no undercover officer would cop a feel in public before making a bust, so I must be legit.
Well, usually three.
She said. I guess I was supposed to know she meant thousand, although I wouldn't have without the glasses on.
But since you just saved me at least $500,
she continued,
I'll consider that as a down payment.
Not to mention, I said, referring to the bills I had slipped her earlier.
I didn't forget,
she said. She was smooth. She had been carrying those Franklins in her hand the whole time, and I had no idea. She finally looked to see that there were three of them.
You're not going to cause me any trouble, are you?
I asked. The word trouble triggered thoughts of getting busted, but didn't trigger thoughts of disease or a man with a gun waiting and hiding somewhere. Good, she was clean.
I promise,
she said.
Okay, one more question. Is that a one-shot deal? Or, for that price, will you stay and have breakfast with me?
She looked at me like I was from Mars. Her thoughts really didn't know what to make of me. For a lot of guys, the best part of hiring a pro is that you can kick them out when you're done with them. The last thing they would want is for her to stay the night. But I wasn't the law if I was copping a feel of her tits in public. She concluded that I was just naive. She was right, really.
No one has ever asked me to stay before. I'm used to leaving hotel rooms at 3 in the morning.
She said.
Yeah, I know, but I've been sleeping alone for a long time now, and this way I'll have you there first thing in the morning, and I won't have to eat breakfast by myself. That is, you will let me buy you breakfast at Paris, the best breakfast in the world? It's not like there isn't enough room for four in that friggin' king bed.
I could tell she wasn't quite comfortable with the thought.
Tell you what, I'll give you an extra grand to cover your time.
I had an ulterior motive, of course. After I fucked her brains out, I planned to pick them, her brains, for what she knew about the best places to find big money poker games. At her going rate, she would know where the money was to be found. She said she had to make arrangements first. She called someone, not a pimp. At her price she worked for herself, but rather a lawyer she retained to make sure she didn't suddenly disappear and to bail her out when she got busted. My glasses told me she was telling him that she was staying at Planet Hollywood for the night, and to start looking for her if she didn't call him by 10 a.m. Then she hung up and said okay, she'd give it a try. That was good enough for me. I grabbed a cab to take us to Planet Hollywood. Up in the room, she put down her purse, ran fingers in their long, red fingernails through her hair, and took a seat on the sofa. I called room service for a couple of outrageously overpriced martinis.
I promise you a drink,
I said.
And a drink you shall have.
While we sipped them, she asked me what I liked. Good thing she didn't have mind-reading glasses on. I generated quite a lengthy list of ideas. I did have my mind-reading glasses on, and they told me what she wouldn't do. No bondage or anything kinky that might make her feel unsafe, anal sex an extra $2,000. Her thoughts gave me an idea.
Oh, I'm pretty boring, I guess, I said. Certainly nothing involving pain. But I do kind of like to be in control. I have an idea, if you can do a little play acting.
I had finished my drink and was walking towards the room safe. Screening her with my back so she couldn't see the combination I picked, I pulled out $3,000 and put the rest in the safe. I also took off the thick rubber band the cashier at Luxor had used to hold my wad of bills together. When I turned back to her, she was finished her drink, thinking.
That's what they always say before they ask for the really weird shit.
She was already a little nervous about being asked to stay the night.
Okay, here's the scoop. I'd love to handcuff you to the furniture and make you do whatever I want. But that would be asking you to take an awful big chance to trust me like that, and it seems I'm already asking for things that are quite unusual. Not to mention, I don't carry handcuffs with me everywhere I go. So here's my idea, see this rubber band? Do you think you could pretend they were handcuffs? If you get uncomfortable with the way it's going, just pull your hand free and I'll understand.
She was thinking this was pretty silly, but then again she'd seen a lot of strange requests. Besides, it was a novel way to play out a domination fantasy without her having to actually be physically restrained and risk getting beaten up. What was concerning her most, actually, was that I was going to get emotional on her, that I was confusing paying for sex with having a girlfriend. She certainly wasn't used to a John giving any thought whatsoever to what she might be thinking or feeling during the transaction. Nevertheless, she decided to play along. She put down her glass and offered me her hands. She put on a pouty expression and said,
"Have I been bad, master?"
"Yes, you have." I smiled, then took off my glasses. I took her hands in mine, pulled her to her feet, and walked her to the middle of the room.
Then I gently helped her hands gather behind her back, and cuffed them together with the rubber band. She stood there with downcast eyes, playing the part of the repentant servant.
Excellent. I am displeased. I began, slowly walking in a circle around her, touching her here, there and everywhere.
That you have forgotten your training. I stopped right in front of her and pulled her top up over her breasts. It was tight enough that it stayed there, fortunately. I took one of her nipples between each thumb and forefinger and squeezed them until they were erect, but not so hard as to cause pain. I was only interested in control.
Now you know that when I come home, you're supposed to be kneeling on the floor, waiting for me. I said.
Like this? She asked, kneeling down on the floor. I grabbed a pillow off the couch and threw it on the floor in front of her.
It is acceptable to kneel on a pillow.
I said, nodding that she should kneel on it rather than on the hard floor.
But otherwise, yes.
She scooted forward so her knees were on the pillow.
Like this, master?
She asked, acting like a slave eager to learn her duties.
And what are you to do while you are kneeling?
I asked. I figured she could probably guess, but just to be sure, I rubbed the side of her cheek with my first knuckle.
Open my mouth, sir?
She asked, forming her mouth into an O shape.
Yes, open your mouth.
I answered, unzipping and unbuckling my pants and letting them fall around my ankles, then pulling my shorts down too. She looked up at me while holding her mouth open for my penis. I slipped it in between her lips. She sucked it like a pro. Of course she did, she was a pro. She used her tongue to entice my dick while it was in her mouth, and was able to take almost all of it in at once. I held her head lightly and pushed my penis deeper, fucking her face but not to the point of forcing it down her throat. Who the hell decided that making a girl gag is sexy anyway? It isn't. As far as I'm concerned, a penis is a guest in a girl's mouth. It should be mindful not to wear out its welcome. It doesn't matter that I was paying good money for this, hooker or not, she was still a person, and people don't like to have things forced down their throats until they gag. She didn't know how I feel about gagging, of course, so she tested me a little by pushing back against my hand to see if I would let her take my dick out of her mouth. I think I surprised her that I immediately let go, letting her disengage from my cock and letting her breathe. She then put it back in her mouth, deeper this time, apparently willing to suck it deeper with the knowledge that I wasn't going to force it in farther than she could take it without triggering her vomiting reflex. Man, it felt good. She was taking it as far as she comfortably could, so I let go of her head, reached down, and grabbed her nipples with my fingers. I let her suck for quite a while, playing with her tits the whole time. Finally, I pulled my dick out of her mouth and indicated she should rise. I stepped out of my pants, took off my shirt, and walked her over to the bed. I undid the rubber band, reached under her skirt, and pulled off her thong, then motioned for her to lie down. When she was lying on her back in bed, I took her hands in mine, gently guided them up over her head, on one either side of the post of the headboard, and then, handcuffed, her to the headboard with the rubber band. I straddled her hips and ran my hands up and down her torso and her breasts. Then I slid beside her and pushed her skirt up to her hips. She was completely shaved. She let her legs fall slightly apart, and I put my finger in between them. I realized she wasn't wet. Not surprising, this was my fantasy, not hers. I suppose she would normally masturbate to get herself ready while doing whatever her customer asked for, but with her hands tied, she hadn't been able to do that. Easily fixed, I thought. She started to pull her hand out in order to manually prepare herself, but I instead moved forward, straddled her shoulders, and thrust my penis towards her face. She reached for it as best she could. She could lick it and put its tip just into her mouth, but she couldn't take it deep at the angle I was at because I was arching over backwards, reaching back with one hand and rubbing her pussy.
You must be prepared before you can receive the master's special gift,
I declared with false pomposity.
As you wish, sir.
She mumbled between slurps of my junk, spreading her legs wider to allow to me to better reach her. She closed her eyes, but rather than closing her eyes to enjoy the sensation like a lover might, she closed her eyes to fantasize about something that got her hot, helping her get wet faster. It must have worked, because I started to feel the dampness growing. I stood up next to the bed, laying my penis lengthways across the length of her lips. She kissed and licked it. I rubbed her clit a bit more. At that point she did slip her hand out of the rubber band, reached for the nightstand, and took a condom out of her purse. She sat up, stroked me a few times for maximum erection, then slipped the condom on my dick. Then she lay back down and put her hands back where I had put them. I slipped the rubber band back onto her wrists, then announced,
"Make ready to receive the master's special gift."
She spread her legs far apart for me. I knelt between her legs, put one arm on either side of her, and slipped my penis into her. The condom took away a little of the feeling, although it would have been worse had they not been ultra sheer. But she didn't get to charge 3G a night for nothing. She contracted her muscles so as to squeeze my penis while it was in her, making her vagina feel much tighter than it actually was. A nice trick, I thought. Wish I could teach that to other girls I've laid. Her breasts bounced just the right amount with every thrust her body absorbed. She kept her eyes closed now. I supposed it helped her concentrate on maintaining excitement, while a stranger was lying on top of her. Nevertheless, she was beautiful, and I enjoyed just watching her body under mine while I screwed her. Eventually I exploded inside the condom. I collapsed on the bed next to her for a second, then pulled off the rubber and rolled over. She had pulled her hands back and was lying on her side next to me, just kind of looking at me.
Are you sure you still want me to stay? She asked.
Yes, I said. And I had bigger plans for tonight than that, but you're so good I'm spent after just one. She laughed at me and ran her finger down my nose. Then she got up and went to the bathroom to wash up. After a time, she came back to bed. She had ditched the tank top, skirt, and shoes, but had put her thong back on to sleep. I smiled at her as she slid under the covers. Then I turned out the light on my side and went to sleep. I woke up before her, but my stirring awakened her almost immediately after. The bed was so big, either of us had affected the other's sleep in the slightest. She turned towards me now and reached for my penis. I had slept naked under the sheets.
Ooh. I cooed. That feels good.
Does it? She teased. She kept stroking it until it was fully erect, then whipped the covers off the bed. She knelt on the bed, made a show of playing with her own nipples until they were hard, then bent over and took my penis into her mouth. I let her do her thing this time rather than dictating. I put my hands under my head at first, then realized my right hand could reach one of her tits, so I played with that, letting her blow me all the while. She sucked me to orgasm with great efficiency. Satisfied, I grabbed a quick shower and dressed. She passed on the shower. I was sure she preferred to save that for when she got home. I realized she only had her clothes from last night, which were not normally the kind of thing someone would wear first thing in the morning, plus they were now somewhat wrinkled from my having scrunched them up while I was screwing her the night before. I offered to take her to Lucky at the Desert Passage and buy her some casual clothes for breakfast, but we would have had to wait until they opened at 10. She preferred to go right to breakfast. I gave her $3,200 and we headed to breakfast. She checked in with her lawyer/protector on the way. As I promised, I took her to the breakfast buffet at Paris. I wasn't surprised to see that she didn't eat very much. If your livelihood depends on your body, you can't afford to get fat. She did seem to like the fresh crepes, though. She was worried that I would ask her stuff about her personal life during breakfast. She was all too happy to tell me about where to find the guys with the biggest money and the best high-stakes poker tables instead. After breakfast, we parted ways in the walkway that connect Paris to Bally's. Inspired by my surroundings, I bid her adieu with a kiss on each cheek, like the French do. She asked if I wanted to exchange phone numbers in case I was lonely again sometime. I had hesitations, but I knew that I would be keeping a phone number for no more than 3 months at a time, so there didn't seem to be much harm. After we exchanged numbers, she headed one way and I the other. As I strolled back to the main casino floor, I had no idea what I was going to do with myself all day. When I went to Vegas for fun, I would hit the tables as soon as possible and work on tying on the biggest buzz I could. But I needed to be sober now that I was basically playing professionally, and I wasn't willing to blow the money I had just earned on a game where the house held the edge. I'd already blown almost half my winnings on Heather. It wasn't worth playing yet. There wouldn't be big money at the tables until the evening, and the less time I spent at the tables, the less time that someone might start to eye me with suspicion. As I walked by the base of the Eiffel Tower, I heard a commotion erupt from the race and sports book area. With time on my hands, I idled over to see what the fuss was about. A couple of bettors were very happy. Apparently a 25-1 shot had come in, and one of the guys even had the trifecta, paying out about $800 on a $2 bet.
"I told you so," the guy was crowing. "I'm telling ya, Idol Passage is a horse to watch."
That's when it struck me that maybe I could find a productive use for the daytime hours too. I turned on my glasses and idled over to the crowd. There was a lot of talking and a lot of jealous thoughts. A couple of guys started turning their attention to a race that was starting soon at Santa Anita. About three of them were thinking of betting the same horse, so I put $5 on him too. He came in sixth.
"Well, not off to a good start," I said randomly to the guy next to me. "I wish I had a good tip on some of the horses."
When I had said,
"Good tip," the guy suddenly thought. "Mirage Cloak in the fifth at Pimlico."
"Yeah, don't we all?"
he said noncommittally. I figured it wouldn't hurt to put something down on Mirage Cloak, who was showing at 13-1. I lost a couple of small bets waiting for the fifth race at Pimlico, but put $20 on Mirage Cloak. Sure enough, he came in, so I was up over $200. I spent the next couple of hours doing the same thing. Some of these guys knew their stuff. They had contacts, did research. Some of these guys were here every day because they were able to make a living betting the ponies. I would just pay attention to their thoughts as they chatted or chat with them myself. Their minds couldn't help but give away their best inside information. I still lost more often than I won, of course, but I later hit a nice trifecta and a few smaller wins too. I also ran into a guy who had inside information on a key unannounced injury on one of the night's games. I bet against that team. I was up $2,000 before I even entered the poker room. I knew the big money would be at Caesars, but I expected to rely on that facility in the coming months. I didn't want to ruin it while I was still learning the ropes. I chose Bellagio instead, just as much money, not as much skill. Being Saturday night, of course, the place was jammed with guys eager to give me their money. I sat at a table at 6 o'clock, and I was up $15,000 when my phone rang at 10 o'clock. I had to fold my hand to answer my phone, which was fine because I had just been dealt 9-5 unsuited. But I couldn't imagine who would even have my number to call me, so I looked inquisitively at the display. It said,
"Heather."
"Now why would she call me?"
"Hello?"
I asked, not knowing what to expect.
"Hello, Tom, this is Heather,"
said the voice on the other hand, trying to sound as breathy as possible.
"You'll never guess where I am. Please tell me it's not District Police HQ,"
I said.
"No, thanks to you. I was sitting in the bar at Caesars when that same guy from yesterday came in,"
she explained.
"So now I'm walking down the strip, but I don't have any destination in mind. So I was thinking, are you going to want a companion for breakfast tomorrow? No extra charge for the morning."
I now had plenty of money to rent Heather again, and the thought of having a nice warm pussy to stick my dick into was sounding real good right about then. So I did some quick thinking,
and came up with a plan.
Okay, meet me outside of Jet at the Mirage at midnight.
We'll talk, I said.
That gives me a couple of hours. Do you have any special requests? She asked.
Yeah, actually, I do. I think I'm in the mood for a sexy schoolgirl tonight, I said.
All right then, she said.
I've got a little outfit that I think you're gonna like.
See you then, she said, then hung up the phone.
I figured that gave me 90 minutes to make as much more money as I could before I went to meet Heather. Luck was with me. I ended up cashing out at 11:15 with 25k more than I started. Good thing that Bellagio, Mirage, and Planet Hollywood were all easy walking distance from each other. I stopped by guest services at PH and for a fee arranged for them to transfer 20k into a debit card account for me. Then I changed into better clothes and headed to the Mirage. I got there about 5 minutes early. Heather wasn't there. I went and got a CC and soda. At least now I could drink too, and sat down to wait for her. When she wasn't there at midnight, I got a little annoyed, but girls sometimes take time to get prettied up, and often the ones that take the longest are well worth the extra time. It was almost quarter after when she arrived, and as soon as she did, I knew that she had been late on purpose. She hadn't wanted to stand around waiting outside the club wearing the outfit she had put on for me, and I didn't blame her. Heather's sexy schoolgirl outfit was right out of strip club fantasy. She had on a plain white shirt, but it was tied up together right below her breasts to expose all of her flat tummy. None of its buttons were buttoned. She had on a fancy, meant for external viewing, black bra underneath in order to avoid arrest for indecent exposure. With this, she wore a red plaid, pleated skirt that was maybe 8 inches from top to bottom. Her butt cheeks poked out the bottom when she walked, and you could catch glimpses of her thong too. The best part was the white thigh high she wore, ending a good 6 inches below the bottom of her skirt. Black, clunky shoes with high heels completed the look. My erection went from 0 to 60 in 0.2 seconds. She spotted me and headed my way. Every man within 100 yards of her turned to stare.
So what's the plan?
She asked, exaggerating the huskiness of her voice.
How about a dance? I asked. I'd like to take you two with me to Jet over there, if that's all right with you. I don't know if that's somewhere where your friends might hang out, and I wouldn't want to embarrass you by being seen in there with me if they were.
I still had my glasses on, so I saw her imaging me being a clod and stepping on her feet. But I could also see she loved to dance and almost never got the chance to.
None of my friends live in Las Vegas, was all she said.
That was probably a good plan on her part. I paid the cover and got us both a drink. While I was waiting in line, I noticed that every single guy around me also stared at her at least once. I realized with that outfit on, she was going to get a lot of attention. When I came back without drinks, I slipped her a wad of bills.
A retainer, I whispered. With the attention you're getting in that outfit, I'm afraid someone's gonna snatch you out from under my nose. I doubt anyone else here can afford me,
she said matter-of-factly, taking a sip.
Come on, let's go to the second floor,
I said, and she followed. The beat was driving, and I was set to dance. I put my drink down on a counter, grabbed her by the hand, and pulled her onto the dance floor. She could dance. And I don't mean like a stripper dances, such that when they go out to civilian clubs everyone in the world knows they're a stripper. I mean she danced like a raver, but she was on it. I'm sure she spent a lot of her daytime hours in the gym, and as a result I could have spent hours watching her move her hips and pump her abs. I did, actually. What surprised her was that I could dance a little bit, too. I had spent a lot of time in clubs when I was in school, and while I wasn't up on this particular style of dance, I just watched her for a little bit, and soon I was able to keep up. We must have been something of a sight, I suppose. She, a hot blonde in a scandalously skimpy schoolgirl-style outfit. Me, an older guy trying to keep up with her on the dance floor, and doing an okay job of it. And as far as either of us was concerned, nobody else was in the club. Don't get me wrong, it's not like either of us was falling in love or anything. But she was here because I asked her to be, I was here with her, we both liked to dance, and neither of us knew anyone else, so they may as well not be there. Sometimes we danced face to face. Sometimes she would turn her back to me and grind her ass into my pelvis. She could feel my hard on, which made her grind it even more. But either way, we were both enjoying ourselves. I kept up with her until 3 a.m., at which time I hit a wall. She had been so into dancing, she had almost forgotten that she was with a customer and had work to do. She latched onto my arm as we walked out of Jet, out of Mirage, and into the Vegas night. We walked across Las Vegas Boulevard, up the street, and into my hotel. It had been hot in there. And dancing for all those hours, we were both soaked with sweat, but neither of us really noticed. Now, when she got to my room, she saw herself in the mirror and freaked.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, Tom, I'm a sweaty mess. Give me 10 minutes so I can clean up and look presentable.
I put my finger over her mouth to shush her.
Stop,
I said.
Yeah, you're sweaty, but I like it, it's real.
Besides, I said, slipping my fingers under her tied-up shirt.
I don't think I can wait that long to get a hold of these.
She gently pulled my hands out of her top.
Well, at least let me go to the bathroom first.
She smiled. As she went, I kicked off my shoes and socks and reclined on the bed. When she came out, she still glistened with sweat, but she had combed her hair and she had taken off the bra that had been under the white shirt. Sweaty as it was almost sheer. I could easily make out the form of her nipples under the fabric. And they were already erect.
You were right, I said. I do like that outfit. I've been carrying this thing around all night,
I said, pulling my erection out of my pants.
I thought you would,
she said, joining me in the bed and swallowing almost my whole penis at once.
While she bobbed up and down sucking me, her tits bobbed up and down, peeking out of her shirt. I shoved my hands under the fabric and held a breast in each hand while she sucked me. She was masturbating with her free hand. I fumbled for the knot in the shirt and untied it. Once her breasts were free, I held them again while she kept sucking. Then I flipped her over. Her short, pleated skirt was easily flipped up to reveal her thong. This time, I simply stretched it over to one side, out of the way, and entered her. It wasn't until I was already in that I remembered I was supposed to use a condom, but she wasn't insisting, she was letting me do her bareback. I suppose since she wasn't a legal prostitute, she didn't have to follow the rules, but I knew she must not do that very often or she wouldn't still be disease-free even if only the richest of the rich could afford to fuck her. As if I needed additional fuel for the fire, knowing that I was getting special treatment made me ragingly hard. I fucked her hard and fast. It was all she could do to spread and hold on and squeeze me with the walls of her vagina. I felt myself go rigid. I thrust my penis in as far as I could and held it there while I exploded in orgasm. I pulled out and lay on my back. She lay on her side next to me, looking at me. "You are a dynamite dancer, you know," I said. "Thanks. I used to love to dance, but I don't get much chance to anymore," she replied. "That's too bad," I said. "It looks like you really have fun doing it. I'm usually working when the dance clubs are hopping," she pointed out. "Yeah, that's too bad too," I said. "You have so much of life ahead of you. Much as I have liked being with you, you should be enjoying your youth, not wasting it on old farts like me. Well, I go back home sometimes to visit my friends and stuff. In fact, I'm flying back home tomorrow for a week," she said. "So I won't be able to come back tomorrow, in case you were wanting me to. I'm flying out on a red-eye myself," I said. She started absently playing with my chest hair and running her fingernails lightly along my chest. "So what's your story?" she asked. "Why are you using Rent-A-Girl instead of bringing your own? I don't stay put for long," I said. "I'm having a go at being a professional gambler." Her response surprised me. "I knew it," she said. "You've been nice to me and treated me like a person even though I am a prostitute. The only customers I've ever had that weren't total douchebags were professional gamblers. Maybe I'm just naive," I said. "But just because you will have sex for money doesn't make you any less of a person. That just makes you a nice guy," she said softly, then after a pause added, "Nice guys don't usually pick up hookers." "And what about you?" I asked. "You're too nice of a girl to be turning tricks. You're not a jaded man-hater or a nymphomaniac. It's none of my business, but I would guess that this line of work is very hard on you on the inside." "Let's not talk about me," she said. I was glad, as I really didn't want to get into what I was sure was a horrendous life story. "But thanks for taking me dancing. I really did have fun. The pleasure was mine," I said. "I not only got to dance, but I got to watch you work that beautiful body of yours at the same time. But if you don't stop playing with my chest hair, you're going to have to go back to work." Her gentle attentions had reawakened my penis, which was now nearly erect again, she hadn't noticed in her thoughts. She smiled, slid her hand down to it, and gently prodded it fully back to life. Then she stepped over me, took off all of her clothes, and sat on my penis. I held on to her thighs while she slid up and down on my cock. She was arching her back and seeming to actually be enjoying it. I gently slid my thumb between her legs and started rubbing her clit while she moved up and down. She started to speed up, and I could, for the first time, sense her breathing becoming shallower, signifying that she was actually having a pleasurable experience as well. When she felt me stiffen further, she crunched her pelvis down as hard as she could onto mine, forcing my penis in all the way, and held it while I came. She didn't come, of course I was still a John, not a boyfriend, but she did get at least a little something out of our last fuck. After I came, she bent over onto me, with my penis still inside her, and hugged me close to her. Kissing, of course, was completely out of the question. When she finally sat up, she asked kind of sheepishly if it was all right if she didn't sleep with me tonight, as she needed to get home to pack for her flight. I looked at the clock and said, "Clock says it's 6 a.m. Guess you stayed till the morning after all." She gave a little laugh then went off into the bathroom. She came back out wearing sneakers, shorts and a runner's top that again showed those wonderfully defined abs. "Off to the gym?" I asked. "I was going to," she said. "But I think I need to sleep before my flight." I gave her another $3,000 to go with the one I had given her in the club. She didn't want to take the extra tip, but I insisted. Then we kissed on both cheeks, she gave a little wave, and was gone. Fortunately, I had paid extra for late checkout, so I was able to sleep until noon. Then I went to Sportsbook for a while and a little more poker before taking a cab to the airport at 10 p.m. For the trip, I made better than $40,000, but after paying Heather I had about $35,000 left. Friday of the week after my Vegas trip, I got a text message. "Leaving LV quitting biz made enough dollar going back to SKLT checks for reminding me I have a right to be happy to Heather." A couple of minutes later I got another, "If you are ever in Oklahoma City, not LA, look me up, I owe you one, again, Julie, aka Heather." I laughed. 1. I had no interest in going to Oklahoma, and 2. Like there was only one Julie in the whole city. Still, I was genuinely happy for Julie reclaiming her life. I made some phone calls to check in with my family until I had used the prepaid minutes up on the phone. Then I removed the battery and put it in a plastic bag with the date written on it. In 90 days, all voicemails and records associated with that phone number would be purged, after which I could reactivate the phone. It was time for the gifted grifter to become someone else for a while.
Chapter 04
Rental Property. After my trip to Vegas, I had enough cash to last me a couple of months, so where should I go to spend it? I needed some time to myself to think about where I wanted to go, and what I wanted to do besides seducing women, of course. The place where I often went in the past when I wanted time to think was the family cottage in Lake Country, but after my encounter with Lauren, the traveling sales rep, I definitely did not want to stay there. But I thought, there are three lakes and lots of cottages, maybe I could rent one. I looked up Lake Country Real Estate and found four different firms with offices in the region, all of them offering sale or rent. I gave them each a call and inquired about renting a place for a week or so with immediate occupancy. All said they had timeshares or other options to choose from. It was not yet peak season, so I figured I'd have good odds of finding something. I decided to drive up and see for myself, although I reserved a room at the Lake Inn as backup. The first office had three agents. An older guy showed me a listing and offered to take me to see anyone I wanted, but I wasn't overly excited about any of them. The second office was busier, with four agents in it. A reasonably attractive female about my age helped me out. There were one or two places here I might be interested to see, but I wanted to look at the other places first. I could tell at first glance that the third office was much less organized than the first two. There were papers everywhere, and although there were only three agents, there was a din from people talking simultaneously. All three were on the phone at once. A middle-aged woman with excessively high, fake blonde hair looked up from her phone and waved me over, but I wasn't about to talk to her. In the back corner, facing the wall, was a petite feminine form with a cascading mass of shoulder-length red hair. She glanced towards the door to see who had come in, still talking on the phone. I could see she was young, no more than 25, and gorgeous. I said she was going to be my real estate agent. Glancing around the office, I noticed a counter full of property flyers with three business card holders on it. I sauntered towards it and read the names on the cards and the holders. James Noonan, Ellen DiNardo, and Aaron McCarthy. Only one female Irish name, pretty good odds on which one belonged to the redhead. Of course, there might be another agent that wasn't here, so I couldn't assume anything. I'd have to let her tell me her name. I grabbed a couple of her cards and shoved them in my pocket. I strolled to the back of the office, nonchalantly touching my temple to turn on my mind-reading sunglasses. The redhead's thoughts had nothing to do with real estate she was arguing with her boyfriend. I could tell that this was a very common occurrence, and she was fed up with it. She had already decided that she was leaving him, was still working out when and how. Oh, a hot young redhead and in a vulnerable state. This could work out even better than I thought. She noticed me walking her direction and hastily whispered in the phone, "I've got a customer, I think I've got to go. We'll deal with this later." She hung up and swung her chair around to face me, putting on a smile that was friendly but could not completely mask the turmoil inside. She was wearing a green skirt cut well above the knee with a matching jacket, and a white blouse with a moderately low neckline, low enough to show lots of skin below the neck, not low enough that her breasts were spilling out. "Nuts. Hi, is your name?" I paused, allowing her to think to herself, "My name is Aaron," to confirm my suspicion before continuing. "Aaron McCarthy?" "Yes, I'm Aaron," she replied, wondering how I knew her name. "A friend of mine recommended you." I lied. She was thinking who could have recommended me? I've been here almost a year and barely sold anything. Maybe I'm finally getting somewhere in this business. I'm looking to rent a cottage or something for a week or so. I need immediate occupancy, and I can pay cash, I continued, flashing her a wad of bills. Her mind was off and running. Cash? Immediate occupancy? That would be a minimum $500 commission today. Boy, could I use that money right now. Oh, absolutely, she said. "Mark," was the name I was using at the time. "Mark, nice to meet you," she said, standing and shaking my hand. "We have a number of properties to choose from." She went to fetch a big book with pictures and descriptions of properties. Way too slow. "Wow, that's a lot. Tell you what, I'm looking for a place on the lake," I said, telling her I preferred the far end of the lake, farthest from where we were if possible. "Available today for a total cost under $10,000. I actually didn't want to spend more than 3-5K, but since 10K was the threshold for federal reporting of cash transactions, I definitely wouldn't go that high. "Can you pick out three or four and take me to see them?" My glasses told me she was a little taken aback I was disrupting her usual workflow. I also don't know to this day if it was an unusual request to be taken to see rentals like that, but I had seen a Scion XB in the parking lot painted over with the company logo, and color Scions make kick-ass billboards, so I figured it was possible. "Sure," she said, dreaming dreams of a quick commission. "Give me a minute to do a quick search." She sat at her desk and pulled up a property search tool on her computer. Entering a few qualifiers as search parameters, she came up with a list of 8 possible matches, which she printed out. "Would you like to look at these in the book?" she asked. I glanced at the printout, asking, "These should all be pretty close together, right?" She nodded. "Yeah, pretty close." "Okay, I'd like to look at these 4. I said, dropping the 2 most expensive and the 2 cheapest from the list. "And I'll pick one." "Okay, we can do that. Let me get the keys to the car." She went and talked briefly to one of the other agents who, humorously, was startled that she needed the car, then came back with the keys, picked up her purse, and said, "Let's go." I sat in the front passenger seat while Aaron drove. "So have you been doing this a long time?" I asked. "My friend tells me you're very good. I've been doing this for not quite a year now," she answered. She was thinking, "It's the best offer I got after graduation from college, even though it's not what I went to school for,
and she was feeling good about my complimenting her skill.
So you are just looking for a week of vacation? She asked, qualifying my as a customer.
Well, actually, I said truthfully, I'm looking for a week now, but I expect to be in the area somewhat regularly in the future, and I'm going to be needing a rental of some sort every time.
Multiple commissions, she thought. I've got to be sure to find this guy what he wants. She already had what I wanted, I thought, but unlike with Heather in Vegas, it wasn't for sale.
Really? I'm sorry, it's none of my business, it's just an unusual situation, she commented.
Well, I'm not an ordinary guy, I said. As I hoped, that stirred her thoughts about guys in general and what she liked in them. I saw she dreamed of a mysterious stranger sweeping her off her feet and taking her away from the small town that she hated living in. I might be able to take care of the first part of that, I thought.
I can't tell you what I do, it's top secret.
Good, she was intrigued. I can tell you I used to work for the Department of Defense.
Which was true. But I can't tell you who I work for now.
Because I don't work for anyone except myself, I thought.
My being up here, though, it has to be low-key. I'm often working undercover, using assumed names. I pay everything cash to avoid leaving a paper trail should someone try to track my movements.
Wow, she said. She was eating up the cloak and dagger talk.
Aaron, I said, looking at her with false honesty. I need someone who can keep a secret. Someone I can call on short notice to find me a place and not question if I give you a different name than the one you know me by. I'll pay cash up front every time. If necessary, I'll pay extra commission if I can trust you.
Poor Aaron. To use a fishing analogy, she had swallowed the hook. I was a mystery man and a recurring source of much-needed commissions. She didn't know me, but I didn't seem creepy to her, phew. She would bend over backwards to get me as a customer. Perhaps that would be one of the things I would have her do to earn it.
No, that would not be necessary, she said. Our standard commissions are fine. And I certainly can understand why a man in your position would require the utmost in confidentiality.
As she said that, she pulled the car off the road by the first of the properties she would show me. Now free to look at me more directly, she turned to me with wide green eyes and said,
If you pay cash up front, I can guarantee to protect your privacy.
Thanks,
I said. I knew you were the kind of person I can trust. And I appreciate your trusting me.
That was a calculated comment. She hadn't thought about the fact that I was asking her to trust me by keeping my identity secret when she answered. She was thinking about the commissions. But now that I framed it that way, the fact that she had already promised me confidentiality meant that she did trust me. So in her thinking, I was now a man she could trust.
Good trust up meant guard down.
We got out and she went to show me the place. High heels and sandy soil don't mix. The land around the lake's area was very loose and sandy, deposits from what had once been a much larger lake. As Aaron walked down a slight incline towards the cottage, the heel of one of her apparently mandatory for female real estate agents pumps sunk into the soil, and she turned her ankle. It was a perfect opportunity. I cavalierly reached out and caught her stumbling figure in my arms. I don't think she would have fallen, and she didn't seriously injure herself, but her thoughts told me that her ankle didn't feel right. As for me, I was not about to pass up the opportunity. I held onto her, awkward position notwithstanding, like if I let go she would instantly fall to the floor.
Are you all right?
I said with exaggerated concern.
Looks like you turned your ankle really badly there.
Is it sprained?
She didn't know.
Since I was holding on to her anyway, she reached an arm over my shoulders for support her while she tried walking. I put my arm around her slender waist, and nonchalantly held the hand of the arm on my shoulder while she tried putting weight on the foot. She took a few steps. I stepped along with her. She was able to walk and put weight on it, but her thoughts told me it felt strange. She decided she was able to continue with the showing. I pretended not to notice her subtle attempts to disengage from me for as long as I could without it becoming obvious that I was just trying to keep touching her.
I'm sorry this wouldn't have happened if I hadn't dragged you all the way out here. Let's go back and get you some medical attention.
No, her mind screamed. I don't want to lose the sale.
No, no, she said. I'll be fine. Let's have a look at this place. High heels like that are pretty, but they're not very good for walking on sand.
I commented.
Why don't you at least take them off and go barefoot?
It being summer, she wasn't wearing hosiery dash.
You're liable to twist it even worse if you keep walking around with them on.
That made sense to her, so that's what she did. And although men like high heels because of the way they accentuate women's legs, for many women bare feet are an erogenous zone.
Walking around barefoot would, if nothing else, make being with me seem more homey and less professional. Any my intentions for Aaron were decidedly unprofessional. The first place was kind of dump. It didn't take long to reject it. As we headed back to the car, I said,
The ankle you twisted was your driving ankle, wasn't it? And you're not supposed to drive barefoot. I know it's against the rules, but at least while we're going from property to property, why don't I do the driving and you give me directions?
Her thoughts told me that indeed, it was against all the rules to have the customer drive. But again, she couldn't argue with my logic. She had already decided, with my help, that she trusted me, and she knew that with the disorganization in her office, no one else from her company would see her and ever know the wiser.
Well, okay, at least until it's had time to heal up a little, she said.
Actually, it was likely that if anything it would start to swell after just sitting for a while, but that would just work in my favor. She tossed me the keys and started giving me turn-by-turn directions to the next place. The second place was pretty close by. Aaron got out of the car and walked barefoot. Her ankle seemed to be causing her more discomfort now. She was favoring her left, but she refused assistance.
She went to the back door and entered a combination on the key vault that was hanging on the doorknob, then with the key that was inside let me into the cottage. It was much better I'd take it if I didn't prefer one of the others.
Okay, let's see the next one, I said.
Lakes often have very irregular shapes, which means that the roads that service the lakefront properties are often snaky, winding ones. If there isn't a circle drive around the lake and here there wasn't, it can make for some very odd road configurations that make it easy to get lost than Erin did. I'm sure the fact that I feeding her reams of made-up spy story stuff about myself helped distract her. Having spent a lot of time in the area growing up, I knew she should have told me to take 3 successive left turns, but she missed the third. I of course pretended I had no idea where I was going.
Wait, oh my god, this doesn't look right, she interrupted.
It appears we are heading away from the lake, I observed.
We must have missed a turn somewhere. Can you do a U-turn?
Oh my god, this is embarrassing, she said. I pulled the car over.
Now don't get all upset about it, I said, tapping her on the thigh. These are some screwed up subdivisions.
We'll figure it out. I looked at her through my glasses while I was talking. The thigh is very close to the pussy, especially if the thigh is bare because the owner is wearing a short skirt, and touching a woman there will usually raise her defenses immediately. She did instinctively respond to the fact that I had touched her on the thigh, but I had done it quickly and lightly enough that she had not interpreted it as a grope. Good, another step closer to the ultimate objective. I did a U-turn and went back where we came. Now flustered, she was disoriented and missed the turn again.
Wait, oh no, this isn't it.
I can't believe this, I'm supposed to be showing you properties, and instead I've gotten us both lost. She put her face in her hands and fought back tears. Tears are a grifter's friend. I pulled over again, put one arm around her shoulder and with the other held her left upper arm.
There, there, it's okay,
I said in as soothing a tone as I could. I saw a few turns we didn't make back there, I'm sure we just need to find the right one. Is there a map in this car? I asked, leaning over open the glove box, making sure I lightly made contact with her legs as I reached.
There wasn't.
Oh well, let's try again, I said. She just stared at the floor. I turned around and headed back. When I got to the street we should have turned on the first time, I said.
There's a street on the left there, is that the one we want?
Erin craned her head to read the sign, mostly obscured by large bushes.
Yes, that's the turn we missed. A left here.
Her relief was palpable. It wasn't far to the cottage once we got on the right road. I pulled off and parked. She got out of the car looking sheepish after having gotten lost. She was favoring her left leg even more noticeably now.
You need to wrap that, I said as we walked towards the place. Looks like it's swelling. I doubt they'll have ice, but let's at least put a cold water compress on it while I look around.
Even before we were inside I knew I'd take this one. It had what I was looking for, and it was getting late. It was already 4:30, and we still had to drive back to the real estate office to get the paperwork started. But first Erin. When we went in, there was an old couch against the wall, and I told her to sit down on it. Between the physical discomfort and her emotional stress, she wasn't about to argue. I went in the back, checked around the bathroom and bedroom areas until I found a towel, then soaked it in the coldest water I could get. I came back out to the living room with the towel. I knelt by her sore foot. She lifted it towards me. I gently touched all around her ankle to see if there was any place where it was especially tender. There wasn't. Then I gently wrapped the ankle of her delicate, slightly freckled leg with the cold wet towel. As I wrapping the towel around them, I gently caressed her lower calves. I didn't really think that the wet towel was cold enough to do anything about any swelling. I just wanted to appear as concerned as possible.
I think I'll take this one, I said. But I notice it's getting late. Will your office even still be open?
I have a key, that's no problem, she said. But I should make a few phone calls. She pulled out her cell phone and called the office telling them she would be in after hours to close a deal. That went fast. Then she got up and kind of hobbled towards the back hallway before dialing her next call to boyfriend. I was sure. She tried whispering at first, but they had been in a fight when I interrupted. I'm sure he wasn't too happy about having been left hanging for this time now. In short order she forgot that I could hear and raised her voice. I heard her say things like,
I've got a job to do, why are you being such an asshole?
Then louder she said,
if I lose this sale because of you I'll be home when I get home.
Finally she yelled,
well maybe I won't come home at all.
Then she slammed the phone shut and stood there glowering for a minute, and then the tears came. Poor Erin. First she had been arguing with her boyfriend, then she'd hurt her ankle, then she'd gotten us lost, and now her boyfriend was apparently throwing some sort of ultimatum at her. She put her face in her hands again and started crying full bore.
I'm sorry, I said as I walked over towards her. I feel like this is my fault for making you work late.
I put my arms around her and drew her into me so she could cry on my shoulder. What better thing for a woman that's crying than a nice male shoulder to cry on? She had to cry her feelings out. Even if she had wanted to pull away, she wouldn't have been able until she had herself under better control. My shoulder must have felt comforting, because when I held her, floodgates really opened. After a time I started to gently stroke her soft, lovely red hair and gave her a kiss on the top of the head. In time she cried it out and only sniffles remained. But she kept her face buried in my shoulder where I couldn't see it until she had herself under full control. A real estate agent isn't supposed to cry on the customer's shoulder. When she felt sufficiently back in control, she stood up, looked up at me and started to say,
I'm sore.
That's as far as she got, because as soon as she opened her mouth I had mashed my lips up against hers. She was startled at first and sort of passively accepted my kiss but didn't pull away.
I could see in my glasses that she was thinking that I was the sort of mysterious guy she liked, that I was being a lot nicer to her than her boyfriend, and that she had already broken half of the rules of appropriate real estate agent conduct. It wasn't going to be any worse to kiss me, too. When she decided that she may as well kiss, she started kissing back with vigor, and that started the ball rolling. It's called emotional transfer, the way humans encode emotional intensity is separate from the way we encode the emotion itself. Thus, any strong emotion can produce leftover intensity that can inadvertently become attached to the next emotion that comes along. This is why people that are anxious get angry easily, for instance. Erin was mad, sad, and embarrassed, and fighting to keep her emotions under control. She should have had plenty of excess intensity built up in her bloodstream. I hope that if I could ignite just a spark of arousal, the excess intensity would attach itself to ID, and her arousal/lust would ignite like a single match in room full of gasoline. I was not disappointed. We kissed eagerly now, and soon added tongues to the mix. We started with arms entwined, but in no time we were rubbing and groping the safe areas of each other's bodies through our clothes. Enough of that. I picked her slender frame up and sat her down on the countertop of the island in the kitchen. She held me face in her hands, kissing me, while I blindly fumbled to unbutton her blouse. She helped by pulling out so it was no longer tucked into the waistband of her skirt. When the last button was finally undone, I pulled both it and her jacket off her shoulders. She pulled her arms out of them through the clothes in the direction of the living room. Then she grabbed my t-shirt and pulled it over my head, throwing it as well. I reached for her bra, but she was there before me, unclasping it with practiced efficiency, letting it slide off her arms and then, whoosh, through the air like the others. She put both arms around me. I kissed her, playing with her nipple with my right hand. Her breasts were healthy, natural C-cups. Her skin was very pale, as most redhead skin is, with cute, sexy little freckles speckled all over, but more concentrated on her torso than her face or extremities. Her nipples were pale as well, more pink than red. The areola were smaller than average, but compensated by sticking well out from the breast an oversized pencil eraser. I broke our kiss and engulfed her left breast like a man that hadn't eaten in a week might attack a steak. I teased the nipple, tickled it with my tongue, tried to suck as much of her breast as possible into my mouth. She put one arm behind her to steady herself, and leaned back slightly to improve my access to her breasts. She played with my hair with one hand, encouraging me, while locking her legs around me. I put my hand on the right breast, then switched my mouth over to it with the same hunger. I oriented myself more upright so that I could sneak a peek at her face. She had her eyes closed, and a hint of a smile on her face. I returned to kiss her mouth again, while at the same time feeling around the waistband of her skirt trying to find whether it zipped in back or on the side. She sat upright, reached behind herself to unzip it, then helpfully raised her butt. I grabbed the skirt and underwear together and yanked them off, tossing them with the other clothes. Then I bent over at the middle and buried my face in her red hair between her legs. She parted her thighs as my tongue reached into her fiery bush, seeking the treasure hidden within it. I felt her clitoris start to rise towards my tongue, and focused on it. Her pussy lips began to engorge and turn a darker shade of pink. I faintly sensed the odor of her juices as they started flowing. She had lain flat on her back on the kitchen counter, arms at her sides, arching her hips upwards towards my flicking tongue. She started making moaning noises, and her skin, especially on her neck and upper torso, took on an increasingly reddish flush. I let up just long enough to let one finger from each hand slip between my face and her crotch, which I used to gently part her labia so that I could lick more of her vulva. I heard her breath grow shallow, and the noises she was making became louder and more grunt-like. She was nearing orgasm, so she put both of her hands on my head to keep it there until she came. I reached one hand up to her nipples while stimulating her pussy with my tongue. I slipped two fingers of my other hand into her now well-lubricated vagina. She made a loud noise that was half moan and half scream, then I felt the contractions of her orgasm rippling through her torso. She lay back to catch her breath, but motioned that I should walk around to the other side of the island she was lying on. With hands over her head, she reached for my belt to take off my pants. I kicked them off to save time. She was still on her back, but now slid upwards so that she could dip her head off the island and below the level of the countertop until her mouth was at the same height as my dick, at which time she swallowed it. Although her head was at an unusual angle, it had the side effect of straightening the usual bend of the esophagus as it moves from the mouth to the throat. With her throat now essentially a linear tube, I was able to fuck her mouth as if it were a pussy. I wasn't as rough with it, of course, but I could slide my dick into and out of her mouth as if it were her vagina, that is, if her vagina had its own tongue, I suppose. Throat fucking Erin was fine, but I could barely see her beautiful red hair as it cascaded straight down towards the floor. That was my favorite of her many fine features, so I pulled my dick out, walked back around to the other side of the island, pulled her hips towards me until they were flush with the edge of the counter, and buried my dick between her thighs. She bent her knees and spread her thin, shapely legs. The towel had fallen off long ago as far as her hips would allow. She held me lightly with one hand on either side of the buttocks, encouraging my efforts as I fucked her. Pausing to grind my pelvis bone against hers, I soaked in and cherished the sight of this red-haired beauty naked and open before me. Then I resumed thrusting, with gradually increasing pace, until I could hold it no longer and let loose with a massive orgasm right in front of her cervix. She sat up, locked her legs around me again, and embraced me while we kissed again. We kept kissing until my now refractory penis could no longer remain inside of her and slipped out. Then I stepped back and let her jump down off the countertop. The first thing she noticed was that her ankle was better. "Well, what do you know? My ankle doesn't hurt anymore." She smiled.
The orgasm probably let loose endorphins, I thought. It'll start to bother her again later.
You should still get ice for it,
I replied as I slipped my pants back on. I paused to kiss her on the cheek as she fumbled with her skirt.
That was way more than I could have asked for from an agent, I said. I guarantee you that I will bring you all of my business from now on. Don't expect personal service like that every time.
She laughed, zipping her skirt.
I would lose my job if anyone ever found out.
And how would anyone ever find out?
Certainly I wouldn't be stupid enough to say anything to anybody, I said.
I guess now we both have to keep each other's secrets, she said, throwing her hands around my neck and giving me a quick kiss, her blouse now on but not yet buttoned or tucked in.
Promise, I said.
But are you sure I can't get personal service like that again?
You were amazing.
You were pretty good yourself, she said.
Lord knows when was the last time my so-called boyfriend made me come like that.
I'm sorry, my dear, I replied.
But a beautiful young woman like you deserves better.
Your man should make you come 3 times a night if that's what you want.
Whoa, that would be too tiring, she said.
But at least once a while would be nice.
And yeah, you're right, I do deserve better.
I guarantee you will find better too, I said. And I don't just say that because I love red hair. I ran my fingers through her hair as I said it.
Her clothes now on, she just smiled and straightened her hair as best she could. If you need a place to stay rather than go back with that boyfriend you were arguing with, you're welcome here, I told her.
Thanks, but I have some friends in town that have a place I can crash at for tonight, she replied.
I'm a real estate agent. If I can't find a place to go pretty quickly, I should quit,
she turned to me and said.
Our secret wouldn't stay secret for long if the others in the office discovered that the company van was parked all night in front of a rental property that I was showing a customer. It's kind of hard to miss it, you know, she teased.
Indeed, she was right on all counts, so I went with her to the car so she could drive us back to the office. Her ankle no longer hurting, she was able to put her shoes back on and drive us back. Once there, I filled out the necessary paperwork, using the name Mark, and paid her the promised cash up front.
I hope you get a nice commission out of this, I said.
It should pay my first month's rent, thanks, she said.
And well, my sales totals haven't been what the bosses were hoping for. Just making a sale is probably more important.
I'll bring you more business, I promise.
And if you need to borrow a little more while you get yourself settled, don't hesitate to ask, I said.
Thanks, but I should be fine, she replied.
Do you need directions on how to find the place again?
No, I'm good, I replied.
And it's late, I've kept you long enough. Hope you have a nice weekend, and I'll be in touch.
I moved to kiss her, but she turned so as to offer me a cheek instead of her mouth.
That was fair.
I kissed the cheek, waved, got into my car, and drove back to the cottage. My weekend got off to a great start, filling me with high hopes the week. Unfortunately, it was the only tang I got that week well, not counting the slut that gave me a quickie blowjob in my car outside the bar. It would not, however, be my last encounter with Aaron.
Chapter 05
Lake Country Girls. I decided to go up the Lake Country area for the weekend again. I put in a call to Aaron, my red-haired real estate agent up there, and told her what I was looking for and at what price. The first time I had rented through her, I had seduced her using my mind-reading sunglasses, but the second time she had been all business. I guess this time would be the tiebreaker. In order to have any chance at seducing her again, I figured, 2 things had to happen. 1, I had to get her out of the office. And 2, I had to get her at the end of the day or, better still, after hours. I guess she would be more amenable to working late on a Thursday than a Friday, so when I called Aaron up I told her I wanted to rent a place, but I made up a story about coming from government business in Jersey. I don't know why I picked Jersey, and that I couldn't get up there until 5:30 or 6 o'clock. I told her to pick a place for me, and I'd pay her double commission if she could meet me at the cottage with the papers at 6 on Thursday. She wasn't real happy about the idea, but she did agree to it because, 1, she bought into the cloak and dagger stories I fed her big time, 2, she needed the commissions, and 3, she had in fact dumped the boyfriend that was causing her trouble when I first met her, so she didn't really have any place better to go.
Now, don't get any idea that because I'm meeting you at the place after hours I'm going to be providing extra service, she said.
Extra service was her euphemism for having sex with me.
Oh no, that's the furthest thing from my mind, I lied. And I really appreciate your going out of your way to get me settled.
Okay, so I had her in the right place and time. But she was pretty adamant about maintaining her professional code of ethics. It was only due to a series of emotionally draining circumstances that I had succeeded in seducing her the first time. How was I going to get around that this time? I actually arrived at the address Aaron had picked for me at 4:30. I walked around and found that there was a private dock with a bench at the end of it.
Perfect.
I sat on it, looking out at the lake, waiting for Aaron to arrive. I was wearing my mind-reading sunglasses and playing with a canister of spare electronics I had brought along. I heard the car drive up and park. Aaron knew I was there because there was a car parked on the grass.
Mark?
She called from far away. That was the name she knew me by. I pretended not to hear. She started to walk around the property. She knew I couldn't be inside, because I didn't have the combination to the key safe that held the door keys. She went around the back but didn't see me at first, not expecting me to be, well, in the middle of the lake.
Mark?
She called again. She walked to the other side of the property and looked but did not see me, so she headed for the lake. Only then did she see the back of a head sitting on a bench at the end of the dock, and assuming it was me headed towards it.
She walked halfway out on the dock, and said in more conversational tone.
Mark?
I turned around like it was the first time I'd hear.
Oh, hi Aaron, thanks for coming out here with the rental papers. I was just sitting here admiring the lake.
I turned towards the lake wistfully.
It's a beautiful lake, isn't it, Aaron?
Sure would be a shame if it became poisoned, of if the lakefront lands became uninhabitable, wouldn't it? I turned towards her quickly.
Do you have well water where you live, Aaron?
I'm not sure. She said.
Drink well water, Aaron.
I said, looking back out at the lake. At least for the next 3 or 4 days.
If you can't get well water, drink bottled water.
Oh, and long baths, swimming, or water sports might be better left for next week, too. That ought to get her attention.
You're scaring me. She said.
Good, fear, like tears, are a grifter's friend.
Life is scary. I said, looking back at the lake. Because the world is full of scary people.
I wasn't speaking very loudly, and when I looked away I was hard to hear that was my intent. She walked all the way out on the dock now, and stood by the edge of the bench, facing my side as I sat. She was wearing a black skirt with matching suit jacket and a jewel blue, satiny blouse, probably sleeveless based on the neckline. I was suddenly animated and turned to her saying,
But whatever you do, don't start telling people what I just told you. We're hot on the trail. Unless these guys are a lot more clever than I think they are, we'll get to them before they can do anything serious. But if there's a panic, not only will people hurt themselves doing stupid things, but it'll tip them off that we're onto them. So whatever you do, keep what I told you under your hat. Just for yourself, try to avoid lake water for a few days.
She was suitably speechless. Her thoughts were about fear, wondering what would happen to the water, wondering what my role was in protecting the public from it. Vague senses of gratitude for public service and awe at the spy stuff. I'd want to build on that.
See what I mean?
I found this. I said, looking away from her at the can of spare parts.
What is it?
She asked. I half-turned and handed it towards the empty seat as if I was passing a plate to someone sitting next to me. As I hoped, her curiosity got the better of her, and she sat down next to me. I handed her the can, crossed my legs in a way that I was turned 45 degrees toward her, and put my arm around the back of the bench where she sat.
It was a delivery device. I found it right by the water's edge empty. I think it always was empty, probably a test of the delivery system. Makes me wonder if, say, Aaron, have any of these other cottages been up for rent recently?
She looked around.
I can't say for sure, but probably not many. This one is the only one on this street that I can remember seeing in the rental books.
So did they rent this place, or did they use this piece of waterfront because they knew it was empty? I wondered aloud.
Has this place rented a lot this season? I asked.
Yeah, it's in a great location, so it's almost always booked. She replied.
I wonder if, would it be hard to get a list of everyone that has rented this property this year, or any others nearby?
No, I could just run a rental history on the address back at the office. She replied.
Oh, well, never mind then. I would need to know by tomorrow morning, and I'm already keeping you after hours. I said.
As I hoped, her sense of wanting to help a good cause and the intrigue I was fabricating were more important than her Thursday evening.
The office isn't too far. I could run back and get that information.
Are there names you're looking for? She asked.
Maybe, but I can't tell you. It's not like I can just have you call me and tell me what you found out. I'd need you to bring me back a printout. I can't ask you to give up that much of your own time. I said.
Well, I love the lake, and if it's in danger, I'm probably looking at not having a job either.
I'll get you the report. She said.
She probably shouldn't have given out information like that without a warrant either, but I had her patriotism stirred up, and she loved the cloak and dagger.
Well, if you're going to run and get me that information and run it out to me when you should be eating your dinner, I insist on making you dinner.
I brought food to grill, there's plenty to share. I said.
Well?
She said, concerned about professional boundaries again, when clearly she had already offered to exceed them.
Let's take care of the rental business first. You can take the signed papers and the cash back with you. That way you don't have to go back after dinner.
I then added.
And since you'll be on your own time, you don't have to keep on the stuffy suit if you'd be more comfortable in a pair of jeans or something. We won't be talking real estate at dinner. We'll be talking national security.
National security, what a great buzzword. High on emotional punch, low on specificity. She agreed to my suggestion, so I got up, she let me into the cottage. I signed the papers and gave her the cash, then went out to start the grill while she ran back to the office. She took almost 40 minutes to get back. The steaks had been done for a while and I was working to keep them warm yet not burning them. I heard the car arrive, then steps heading towards the cottage. I was ready. Aaron had taken me up on the offer to get comfortable. She was wearing a pale green spaghetti strap sundress with brown, high wedges. The skin of her shoulders and upper torso was exposed, showing the wonderful matrix of freckles on her pale skin. But even more stunning, with her hair now flowing free instead of gathered or up in a professional fashion, her cute face was framed with a halo of soft, blaze orange hair. She was pretty in professional clothes, but she was gorgeous dressed casual.
Did you get the information?
I called as she approached. She waved a stack of papers she was carrying.
Great, dinner is ready.
I showed her into the cottage, and she headed to the dining area. I'm sure she was expecting burgers and potato chips. What girl has ever been seduced over burgers and potato chips? I had a nice cut of steak to share, 2 kinds of potato salad, store-bought unfortunately, and fresh lettuce salads in separate bowls. I also had a bottle of wine already open from which I was drinking. Yeah, I know you're supposed to drink red with steak, but I like white better.
Please sit.
I said, holding out her chair for her like a maitre d'. The wine is pretty good. I am not a big wine drinker, so if you're into wine, you'll probably find it too sweet. I've got a few sodas and stuff somewhere if you'd prefer, but I don't recommend the water.
I had already poured her a glass of the wine, so she decided to go ahead and drink it. I glanced at the papers when I first sat down to dinner, but declared I needed my hands to eat and proceeded to spend the rest of dinner talking about Aaron. She seemed much more at ease now that she was, in her own mind, off duty, and didn't even seem to notice that the majority of the conversation revolved around her and her personal life. I didn't ask anything too touchy, but I learned she was not living by herself after dumping her boyfriend, that she'd been selling more in the last few months. My arrival might have given her a boost of confidence, and she told some stories about her friends and parties on the lake. Dinner was good, and we enjoyed it at a leisurely pace. We each had 2 glasses of wine. I was kicking myself for not buying another bottle. Finally, when it started to feel obvious that I was stalling, I cleared the dishes, pulled my chair up next to hers, and we started going through her printouts. I spread them all out on the table. We could see them all at once. Then I started poring over the entries. I had her help me search for duplicate renters, unusual or nonspecific, like PO boxes, addresses, or multiple renters from the same permanent address. We were both looking this way and that over the papers. It was inevitable that we would end up touching. Her hand brushed my arm would brush her shoulder, and so on. I couldn't find anything that would sound believably suspicious, so finally I just acted like one of the names she read off to me sounded familiar, a name on one of the sheets furthest from me and closest to her.
"Wait, what's that name again?"
I asked, putting my hand around her shoulder and craning over to see. She picked up the paper and brought it closer to me, repeating the name. I kept my arm around her shoulder as we held the paper between us, 1 hand apiece. I pretended to be trying to remember something, then said,
"Aaron, I think this might be it. I think I've seen this name before."
I looked right at her with false excitement.
"I think you found the clue we needed."
She looked back at me with a pleased look on her face. I looked her in the eyes and smiled back, but kept looking into her beautiful green eyes as I let the smile fade. She saw the look in my eyes change but didn't look away. I saw her gulp, at which time I swooped in for a kiss. She didn't fight it, but rather responded in kind. I brought my arm down from her chair back to cradle her neck. She put a hand on my shoulder. We kept kissing, with increasing intensity. Finally, she paused for air, saying in a mock serious tone,
"Mark, I told you no more special service. You're off duty,"
I replied.
"No name tag or nothing. You're not here as Aaron, real estate agent. You're here as Aaron, dutiful citizen, protector of lakes and most beautiful woman in a 5-county area."
"Stop it," she giggled, so I kissed her some more instead. I let my free hand slip under the spaghetti strap of her dress and slide it off her shoulder. Then I pushed down on the fabric of her dress so that it would slip off of her breast. She wasn't wearing a bra. She put both arms around my neck now, kissing, while I touched her tender pink nipple and teased it to full erect excitation. Then I ran my fingers through her hair while I bent over to take the nipple into my mouth. She put one hand on the back of my head. I now moved my hand out of her hair and felt for the zipper in the back of her dress. I pulled the zipper down as far as I could the way she was sitting, then pulled the other strap off and exposed all of her upper torso. I put the newly exposed breast in my mouth while continuing to tweak the other with my left hand. She let out an involuntary half-gasping sound. Suddenly, she pushed lightly against me to indicate I should give her room. She stood up, finished unzipping the dress, and let it fall to the floor. She put a hand out indicating that I should stand, so I did. When I stood, she sat back down and took my penis out of my pants. She kissed it many times and licked the underside before taking its length into her mouth. The view of her fiery red hair and gently freckled, pale skin bobbing back and forth was almost as stimulating as it felt to have my meat inside her soft, warm mouth. As her sucking picked up pace, she pulled aside her thigh and started to masturbate. I watched her fingers manipulate her red pubic hair. As her excitement grew, the treasure that lay within it grew flush and became easier to see. I stepped back and put a hand out to her, intending to lead her back to the bedroom. Instead, she stood up, took off her panties by bending at the waist and pushing down, then just lay on her back on the floor. Whatever she was, well worth a few rug burns. I knelt between her thighs and plunged into her depths. She bent her knees and drew them in close, and actually grabbed her ankles in her hands while I fucked her. Her eyes closed, she started to make more pleasure noises. As my thrusting grew more insistent, she let go of her ankles and tried to put her arms around my neck, but I was hard to hold on to, jackhammering back and forth as I was. So instead, I reached for her slender ankles and lifted them up towards my shoulders until they rested on my shoulders just on either side of my neck. I was now able to penetrate even deeper into her lovely red snatch, resulting in even more insistent fucking from me and even more audible appreciations from her. I watched the lovely red-haired young thing under me as I fucked. Then I noticed how the force of my thrusts was causing her lovely breasts to rock in a particularly pleasing fashion. That put me over the top, and with my dick buried inside her in full missionary position, I had a massive climax. I really tried to talk Aaron into staying, but she had to work on Friday and didn't have another work-appropriate outfit with her. I didn't blame her for not wanting to have to drive from this cottage to her apartment in order to get dressed and then still get to work on time. I told her to call me when she was done with work the next day, and she told me if she had a chance she would. We both knew that she wasn't going to call me. But I was not 2 for 3 in fucking Aaron. And every time I succeeded in seducing her, the better my odds would be of getting her open up her lovely red-haired body before me next I rented from her.
Friday I didn't do much, but Saturday I was again in the mood for a little trim. I decided to try cruising the beach. The lake where I was renting had a sand beach that started as private beach club property for owners of land on the lake, then continued on as part of a state park. There were signs demarking the boundary, although enforcement was rarely an issue. The county did ticket cars parked in the private beach lot without the required parking hang tag, though, so the campers on the state park grounds tended to stay on their half of the beach. State park campgrounds are interesting. There are generally two types of people there. The most common is the family, frequently extended or multifamily groups, but almost always with at least one child under 10. When the kids get too much older, they become part of the second type of person. The second type of person is the young couple, often high school aged or at least under 21. Sometimes these couples are kids without a lot of money vacationing, or even honeymooning on the cheap. Most often, these are kids that don't have regular access to a place to fuck. Camping is perfect. You get to play around at the beach all day, enjoying each other's swimsuited bodies, and I have yet to see one of these girls that wasn't wearing a bikini designed to impress. Then you get to play around with each other in your tent all night. Parents get less bent out of shape if you announce you're going camping with your boy/girlfriend than if you just say, "Hey, I'm taking my girl to a hotel tonight so I can fuck her brains out." Even though the end result is the same. This particular setup had inadvertently created an unusual dynamic at the beach, trading up. Anyone who could afford the lake land that was the entry requirement for use of the private beach was at minimum upper middle class. Many of the people at the state park were not. Boys from the private beach would routinely cross over to the couples at the state park and start hitting on the more attractive girls there. Since the rich boys could often offer things existing boyfriends often could not, like taking a girl water skiing or an upgrade from a tent to a lake house, this technique could be reasonably successful, once the girl figured out how she would get back home after ditching the boyfriend. Girls from the private beach, of course, resented the girls coming over from the state park. They wanted to upper-class guys too, and being from money themselves virtually responded to advances from the poor guys regardless of looks. They viewed the state park girls as sluts that the rich boys picked up because they were easy, not entirely incorrect, as the girls who could be convinced to ditch their current boyfriend by a stranger on a beach were not going to be the most closed-legged girls you've ever seen. With all of these sexual dynamics playing out regularly, the beach had seen more than its fair share of fights, boy-girl, boy-boy and girl-girl. It was a perfect setup for the gifted grifter. While I had the money and the toys, the rental included boat use, I wasn't a kid anymore. I was going to have to overcome a potentially significant age difference to free one of the campground sluts from her companion. I felt pretty good that the unfair advantage I had through the use of my mind-reading sunglasses would be enough to make up the difference. The boat that came with the lodge I had rented was a 90-horsepower inboard Sea Ray. That would work. I tossed in a water ski rope and skis just in case, then piloted the boat over to the beach. I was planning on using the boat as the hook to entice some girl to come with me, so I needed to have it on hand. Arriving in a boat also announced that I had land on the lake instant. Rich. Cred. I made a couple of passes by the beach before anchoring it in the shallows by the swimming area, hoping my arrival hadn't gone unnoticed. I then sauntered across the private area and onto state park lands. I saw a number of worthwhile potential partners already there, so I went about starting to talk to them. My early returns were not encouraging, however. There were two blondes in matching black bikinis. I went to talk to them, but even if they had ideas of ditching their boyfriends, they wouldn't or couldn't in front of each other. I talked to another in a yellow and black Corona bikini, long brown hair and outstanding abs, but she clearly was not open to the idea of being with someone my age. I similarly talked to a girl with dishwater hair and a nice C-cups, or better, considering her slimness, wearing a purple reflective bikini top with black bottoms, but she wasn't particularly receptive to someone my age, and when her boyfriend returned to the scene she quickly decided to stick with him. I disappeared before I ended up in the hospital. After lying low for a while, I came back to the beach with a captain's chair I had pulled from the boat and sat on the grass, watching the comings and goings, looking for someone else that might be more receptive to my advances. I watched the blonde walk in from the parking lot. She was tall and skinny, wearing green combat pants and a tight red sleeveless t-shirt. Her boyfriend was wearing swim trunks and nothing else, which was too bad because it would have been nice to cover up his substantial gut. They walked together, but not holding hands as many couples did, even though either cared enough to prevent them from doing so. I figured she was a prime candidate for a girl looking to upgrade. But was she worth my time? I watched a little longer. They went to the far edge of the beach, nearest the private beach boundary, and set out towels on the grassy patch above the sandy part of the beach. Then she reached for her waistband and untied it. She slipped off her flip-flops, then slipped her pants off. The graceful and unconsciously sexy manner in which she did that had me sold that she would be a good lay. She then pulled off her red t-shirt. She was wearing a bikini that was mostly white, vaguely shiny, and had some sort of patch of design in blue on the left breast and right buttock. Her tummy was flat and firm. Her breasts were not particularly large, but she was also not flat. They were at least a B-cup, and in the context of her skinny frame they stood out appropriately. Her legs, however, were especially long and lean, and their exposed length called attention to her. Yup, plenty good enough. I strolled in their direction, deciding how I would break the ice. It's hard for a single guy to strike up a conversation with a couple, as you might imagine. "Man, is it hot today?" I said loudly. They both looked at me, so I had succeeded in getting their attention. "Too hot to be sitting on the beach, gotta get out there in my boat." "Sounds nice," the girl said. "But we don't have one." The guy looked at me with a look that kills. "Well, I've got plenty of extra room in mine, why don't you two come along for a ride?" I asked.
The girl started getting up immediately and gathering her things, saying, "That would be great. My sunglasses told me she was thinking he must have money. If he has a boat, this could be a step up in the world." The guy mumbled something, but didn't have much of a choice now. I led the two of them across the state park beach and onto the private area. "Don't worry," I said. "My cottage is part of the private beach club, so we're good here." My sunglasses told me the girl was suitably impressed. I paused then asked, "So what are your names anyway?" Her name was Shannon. I don't remember what his name was, since I wasn't paying attention to his answer. We waded out to the boat. Her fat-ass boyfriend had trouble climbing aboard in the waist-deep water. Shannon put her hands on the deck and lifted herself straight out of the water in a modified push-up. I asked them to pull up anchor. Her boyfriend started looking around, not knowing what to do. Shannon leaned out and grabbed the anchor line, then straightened up and pulled it up. Her ass was tight, and the muscles of her back and thighs twitched effortlessly in the process. She was no stranger to the gym. I backed the boat out and started cruising around the lake. Since there were only three of us, I let the boat steer itself for a second while I converted the back seats to a flat deck, designed for sunbathing. "Hey Shannon, for the best breeze, lay out on here," I said, slapping the deck. She sat on it, knees bent, supporting her torso with her hands, looking a little like an upside down. "W. Hey, nice, you look like you belong in a boat ad," I told her. She smiled broadly at that. I figured that Shannon would get into showing off, so I cruised by the beach a number of times and around the lake in sight of the shore. The guy was getting bored, but Shannon was loving this exactly as I expected. "I bet you're a skier," I said to Shannon when I had a chance to peek back at her sunning herself on the deck. "I've only done it a few times, but I love it," she said. "I've got skis and a rope right under here," I said, tapping my foot on door of the hull storage unit. "I've got to get back," the guy hemmed and hawed. Shannon looked at him and said, "Come on, have a little fun." Her mind was thinking, "You don't ever want to do anything except maybe have sex." He wasn't too up on it. He could tell that the more time Shannon spent with me, the less interest she would have in sticking with him. It was a little soon to force Shannon to choose, but the conversation was heading that way and her last thought told me I had a chance to come out on top. "Not to worry," I said. "If you want, I can drop you off on shore, looking at the boyfriend, and I'll take you out on the lake, looking at Shannon. I can drop you back off here or wherever you want when you're done." "Okay, that's a great idea," Shannon said. The boyfriend liked this even less, but by now my glasses told me he was getting pissed at her anyway. Shannon was thinking, "Good, I don't want you around anyway." I pulled up offshore near the beach and dropped off the boyfriend. Then I raced to the far side of the lake where she would be all but impossible to see from the shore before giving her a life jacket and putting her in the water. "Your boyfriend there doesn't seem like much fun," I commented. "No, he's not very adventurous," she admitted. "You are," I said, referring to the fact she was skiing with a stranger. She liked that label, so I added, "I am too." She was nowhere near the skier that Lauren, the traveling salesgirl, had been, but she could get up and stay up and was having a good time. While she was out on the water, her phone rang. Then 5 minutes rang again. After the second time, I called out to her. "Your phone is ringing." She waved her hand in the universal signal for, "Don't worry about it." I guessed it was her boyfriend, and I could see in my glasses she did too and didn't care. This was the life she wished she lived, and she didn't get the chance to do this every day. She was out for a long time by water skiing standards. I handed her a towel to dry off and started reeling in the rope. She went to listen to her messages. I positioned myself so I could see read her thoughts while I coiled. Shannon had gotten 4 calls from her boyfriend. The first asked her to come back. The second said she better come back or else. The third said he wasn't joking. The fourth said, "Fuck you, I'm going home, you can find your own way back, bitch." This must not have been the first time she pulled something like this, because I would think a guy like him didn't land a piece like Shannon very often. He must have been pretty fed up to bail. Heck, even sloppy seconds would be well worth the wait from her. "God damn it," she stamped her foot. "That loser left me stranded here. Jeez, we weren't gone that long," I said. "Where are you from anyway?" She was living about an hour away, in a town that was a popular vacation destination. She worked there as a lifeguard at a water park. "Well, I'm sorry you're stranded. I feel responsible. I'll be happy to take you home when I go home tomorrow. It's not too far out of the way," I said. "Plus, you'll have to spend the night somewhere," I thought. "Well, thanks, but what, I need someplace to go tonight," she said. "No, you don't. You'll stay in my cottage. There's plenty of room," I said. I could see in her mind that she knew that more than likely accepting my invitation meant having to sleep with me, but that fact didn't elicit much of reaction either way. I guess she really was a slut. "Well, I appreciate that. Seems I don't have many options left," she pouted, still mad at the boyfriend. I suddenly wondered how old she was. It shouldn't have been that hard to figure out why he left her here. Then again, pretty girls like Shannon can get away with a lot of stuff. All they need to do is show a little skin, bet those pretty eyes, and maybe give a blowjob or two, and most guys will forgive a lot. "From the message, I expect my stuff is strewn across the beach somewhere. Can we go retrieve it?" "Sure," I said. "Then maybe we can go catch some dinner at the bar," I said. Then my glasses saw her mind react to that. Turns out she was only 19. "Yummy. Or we can make something at the cottage too. I'd just as soon just grill out or something. I don't go to bars much," she replied. She wasn't lying. My glasses told me she had a fake ID, no surprise there, but didn't use it much. Good, it might not be too hard to get her drunk then.
She also wasn't to let on how young she was. That was fine by me, because then she wouldn't find out how old I was. I went back to the beach and she found her backpack and a few loose items piled up on the blanket they had been lying on when I first interrupted them. She gathered it all up and waded back out to the boat. I drove it back to the cottage and tied it up on the dock, then I led her up to the cottage.
Just dump your stuff there in the corner,
I said, not wanting to assign her a separate bedroom and not yet ready to suggest she put them in mine. I went into the kitchen area and poured two strong Canadian Club and Sevens. She accepted hers and started drinking with the gusto of someone who doesn't get to drink much. I also brought her a bottle of water, a lesson I learned with Lauren, but she barely touched it. I went outside and tossed some burgers on the grill. She came outside and sat in a chair. Since I was the only person to talk to, she had put her pants back on but remained in her bikini top. She was lean and had nice abs. I poured her a second drink. She asked some stuff about me. I repeated a lot of the story I had been telling Aaron, and while she wasn't quite the sucker Aaron was for a cloak and dagger story, she was eager to hear about anyone whose life she perceived to be more interesting than hers. After dinner I cleaned up, then took the few food scraps down to the lake to feed the fish. When I came back Shannon was standing by the railing of the deck, looking out towards the lengthening shadows of an approaching sunset.
Ooh, that's going to be pretty, I said. Let me get you a fresh drink and I'll join you.
Thanks, she said, looking distantly. I came back with her drink. I put mine down on the railing, then stood behind her and wrapped my arms around her midsection while we watched the sun go down. She put one of her arms on mine, perhaps to keep tabs on them, while holding and steadily sipping from her drink with the other. My glasses told me her thoughts were becoming muddled as her buzz intensified. She wasn't particularly inhibited to begin with, so once the alcohol reduced them even further she started to get horny. She was actually starting to fantasize about fucking me. Okay, guess I didn't need my glasses anymore. I kept one arm on her belly while with the other I took off my glasses and put them into their hard protective case not easy with one hand. The arm that was on her belly wasn't just idle now. I was slowly and deliberately feeling the smooth, textured surfaces of her 19-year-old skin. When I finished putting my glasses away, I didn't put that arm with the other. Instead, I gently untied the back of her bikini. She felt me do it and didn't stop me. Once untied, I slid my hand forward and held her right breast in my right hand. At the same time, I started to nibble on her left ear. The way she leaned back into me told me that she liked this so far. I was pretty sure that even if there were people in the neighboring cottages they couldn't see, but I still felt a little too out in the open to be openly fondling Shannon this way. Let's go inside, I whispered, and wordlessly she followed me. I closed the door and drew the shades. Shannon waited until I was watching her before she pulled her top off completely. With the top in her hands high above her head, she moved in slow motion to discard it, giving me time to get close to her. When I did, she put her arms around my neck and kissed me. I put one arm around her, while I played with her nipple with the other. It was soon fully erect. Shannon then started to feel for my penis in my shorts. It wasn't difficult to find by now. She gently moved things around so that my penis was free enough for her to hold in her hand. Successful, she began stroking it. Suddenly Shannon started getting shorter, or so it seemed. Actually, she was doing a slow knee bend, like a stripper might. She kept going until my penis was at the same level as her mouth. She then pulled my pants down entirely and, after a few introductory licks, swallowed me whole. It's funny, I got the distinct impression that Shannon was trying extra hard to impress me. I didn't have my glasses on, but it dawned on me that this might be another age thing. Shannon knew I was older, and expected that I would have had lots of experience. She didn't want to let on how young she was, especially after I had served her a considerable amount of alcohol, so she was trying extra hard to appear older and more experienced herself. Shannon had seen some porn somewhere, perhaps from a boyfriend or on the internet, because she was trying her best to deep-throat me. I wasn't complaining. But she didn't do very much with her tongue while my dick was in her mouth. I guess she couldn't see that on the screen, so it hadn't occurred to her to do it. For her, sex was still mostly about reproducing physical actions she had seen. Learning how to learn from your partner's reactions was still a lesson in progress. But don't get me wrong, she was a pretty young thing sucking my cock. I was hard enough to hammer down the loose nails in the staircase with my dick. And yes, ladies, it's sad but it's true, her 19-year-old body, and to some degree just knowing that she was only 19, makes a man extra, extra hard. She had moved from her deep knee bend to a conventional kneeling position, but I couldn't help but think that with all the chairs around, she didn't have to be kneeling to blow me. But kneeling while sucking does have kind of a submissive undertone to it, which makes it that much sexier. Since she had gone down on her knees of her own accord, I wasn't going to stop her. But if she didn't stop sucking me soon, I was gonna pop off in her mouth. I thought about whether I should, in fact, but decided I wanted to fuck her too, and the amount of time it would take me to be ready to go a second time would be a signal of just how old I was, so I decided I would have to hold my load for now. With some reluctance I pulled my dick out from between her lovely red lips. With a slight nudge, she got the message to go to the sofa. I went to kneel before her. She took her pants and panties off before I got there. She didn't just drop them, though. She pulled them off her butt, sat down, straightened her legs up in the air, and slipped them all the way up and off without bending her knees. I could barely touch my toes. She could take her knickers off without bending her knees. And I was gonna fuck her. I knelt now and began to lick her muff. She had a bikini wax. Her pubic hair was dark gold, so her hair color must be natural. I also noticed that she had a small tattoo of a red devil near the fold where the legs joined the torso, just up and to the left of her mound.
It was meant to be only visible when she was sharing her pussy. Now again the porn thing, I wonder if she did these things just because she was trying to impress me or if she always did them. Anyway, she spread her legs in a wide open V, but kept them straight. Nevertheless, she was able to grab her ankles and hold on while I slurped at her crotch. Perhaps she had been trained as a dancer or gymnast. Or maybe she was just fucking 19. I wanted to eat her until she came, but the fact was she was looking so good I was gonna blow my nuts any minute, and I didn't want to get cheated out of feeling her from the inside. She was plenty wet, so I straightened up and rammed my erection into her pussy. She watched me with a sexy, mischievous look on her face while I penetrated her. Her blonde hair, mussed from the water, framed her pretty face. Her bare breasts, nipples fully erect, enticed me and responded to my thrusting with gentle rippling back and forth. Her lower torso muscles were even more defined by her stretch, but especially her long, lean legs, splayed out unbent to either side and being held there by her own hands. That was hot. As a result, I was thrusting at full power from the moment I entered her. I held off for as long as I could until I had to let go. Waves of pleasure emanated from my groin as I gleefully ejaculated repeatedly inside her. After I came, we lay intertwined on the couch for some time, talking some, playing some, teasing some. Eventually we headed to bed. She was young, of course, so she was wide awake. Maybe my dick understood that it didn't get 19-year-old pussy very often, because it was ready to go again surprisingly quickly. I nailed Shannon again, in the bedroom, before drifting off to sleep. I was hoping for some morning trim too, but without the alcohol in her and perhaps seeing me in the harsh morning light, it didn't happen. I fed her breakfast, closed up the cottage, then drove her back to her place before heading home myself. I gave her the cell phone number I was using at the time, and she gave me hers, she claimed. I never tested it. She never called, which was probably for the better. I'm sure she was splitting that beaver for some young stud before the week was out. Because when you're hot and only 19, you can. This story is continued in the next part. This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network. Please visit our other podcasts. Their links are in the description of this episode. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions with bonus episodes.